Thank you. All right. I'd like to call this meeting of the Arizona Board of Technical Registration to order here on January 30th, and it is 9 a.m. First order of business, Mr. Weber, would you kindly do a roll call?
Mr. Kleka?
Here.
Mr. Sales?
Present.
Mr. Nesgood?
Here.
Mr. Gilmore?
Here.
Ms. Klett?
Present.
Dr. Campbell?
Present.
Ms. Hobig? Ms. Lindgren? Ms. Skanky? Mr. Smith?
Here.
Ms. Bohol?
Here.
Hey, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Haiti. All right, next on our agenda is the call to the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes. Pursuant to ARS, the board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that that matter be placed on a future agenda. Is there anyone here who wishes to address the board as part of this call to the public who is not currently on an existing agenda item?
Hey, Mr. Blaisdell wishes to speak.
All right. Mr. Blaisdell, if you would please, could address the board for 3 minutes.
Yes, good morning. My name is Aaron Blaisdell. I'm a registered land surveyor in the state of Washington, state of Oregon, state of Idaho, and state of Alaska. And I'm a fellow board member from Washington State as well. One of the things that I wanted to come before you this morning, and I appreciate the time, is to really speak about the NCWS Western Zone Vice President nomination from Washington State that I have received, and I wanted to ensure that I get the word out of the kind of ideas and things that I am really excited about for the Western Zone coming up. Once elected, I will take on the role of getting our zone together. I've demonstrated a lot of great ideas and a lot of good collaboration with other fellow zone applicants and zone MBAs and zone members, and I want to encourage that as well going forward. I've served on the ETP committee. I've also served on the Professional Land Surveyor Exam Development Committee and Public Outreach Committee, and I just want to encourage, just like the fellow board members in the room, encourage Arizona's participation within the Western Zone. It's an exciting time. States like Hawaii, California, my own state of Washington, and others as well, Guam, we have some great ideas, and we want to bring those together in a group forum and talk about them and take action on them. We all talk about the same things. I'm going to be in this meeting today listening in and, of course, being a resource to your board, but I want to encourage this collaboration. Western Zone is one of the strongest zones in NCWS, and I want to encourage that to continue. At this time, I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Blaisdell. Unfortunately, we can't really take questions at this point because this is a call to the public. However, there may be interest in placing any items on a future agenda. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else, Kurt?
I just want to put it on the record that Ms. Hobick has joined the meeting.
Thank you. All right, any other calls to the public? All right, hearing none, we'll close that item and move on to item 4 on our agenda, which is the adoption of the minutes. Has the board had a chance to review last month's, this month's, January 5th board meeting minutes? If there are no comments or questions, we'll take a motion to adopt the minutes.
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I'd like to push a motion forward to approve the January 5th, 2024 board meeting minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Do we have a second?
Bill Nesgood, I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Nesgood. Any last discussion beforehand? All right. Those in the room, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Right. Online, Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Any opposition? Motion carries. All right, next on the here is the consent agenda. Ms. Pham, if you'd like to give us a brief overview, we'd appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, if I may, when the consent agenda is called, I believe one board member did want to pull a matter out of the agenda.
Yes, in fact, there's actually three items that are going to be pulled out of the agenda. So I just wanted to give Ms. Pham an opportunity to do an intro, and then we'll ask any cases that will be pulled. So thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Board. Yes, the licensing items are under the consent agenda and included in your packet, but I'm open for any questions for any specific applications.
All right. Looks like we have Ms. Kanky joining us as well for the record. All right. First and foremost, we'll ask board members if there are any items on the consent agenda that you wish to pull and address independently. I believe we have a couple.
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I would like to pull 5A, 5A1, Salvador Solis, off the consent agenda for further discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. I believe we have two others.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, this is Keith Smith. I'd like to pull 5A, 8A, and 5A, 8B for further discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Are there any other items that the board wishes to pull from consent agenda? All right, we've got three. So if we can do this, we'll have to do a motion basically to approve the consent agenda, but then note the three cases that are going to be pulled. So we'll entertain a motion for that.
Chair, I'd like to make a motion to accept staff recommendation on the consent agenda for items 5A, 1, 2, 3, 4, then 5A2, B and C, and then items 6 and 7.
Thank you, Mr. Gilmore. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I will second that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Any further discussion or any other items to pull from consent? All right. Those in the room, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right. Those items on the consent agenda are approved. Let's go back then to consent agenda item 5A1, Salvador Solis. Mr. Sales.
Yes, on item 5A1, Salvador Solis, I don't know if we're able to contact him this morning or if we can contact him to get a little more information. Looking through the information provided, there's a transcript, an education's transcript, where he's got a master's in construction management. And then on his resume that's attached, he notes that he's has a master's in civil engineering. And as he's applying for the time, the 12 years of time for the E, to waive the FE, I'd like to just further understand if there's a transcript that was missing related to the master's in civil engineering, and how that all goes down. And then as well as I just would like maybe a little more information on the credit that was provided to him during the review for 60 months of education credit. When his undergraduate was not in an engineering or technical field, and it's just the master's in construction management that has some engineering in there as well. There's a couple notes of graduate certificates, but those would, based on looking at the transcripts, those were just really seeing classes inside of his master's in construction management and some of his undergraduate that combined to make those certificates, which we don't. Look at certificates, we look at the whole with all the education and the various classes inside. So I don't know if he's able to be reached today or if staff can reach out to him just to clarify a couple of those points.
Yes, Mr. Solis didn't he didn't ask to be called, or he wasn't made available for this meeting. I actually did get that clarification from him because I did notice that same indication of the civil degree, but only saw that it was construction management, so it is just a master's in construction management. As far as the evaluation by the assessor, I can't speak to how he credited that education and the coursework, but that's what the evaluator gave him, is the 60 months of credit for that.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't as worried about the 60 months because he has a lot of work credit, which whether you had the 60 months in there or not, he would still be he would still fall under the work credit. Now, what information did he provide in response to the putting civil engineering master's on his resume?
Yeah, I was trying to find the email that we had communicated, but I'm not able to find it. So I can get clarification from him.
Okay, yeah, I think that'd be good just to understand. It's putting something like that on a resume that's spread around for folks when you really don't have the classes, the calculus, and all the other things to back that up. It's just it's a point I'd like to have clarified before we waive an exam such as this so they can practice in the FE realm. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. So that one will basically stay off the consent agenda, and we'll basically hold that one for now until further information can be obtained from staff.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, if the email is able to be found during the course of this meeting, then maybe potentially table it until later if we can find the information, if there's a good enough reason on why you're able to.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. All right, Mr. Smith, you had items, consent agenda items 8A and B, if you'd like to share your comments there.
Sure, yeah. For 5A, 8A, Cotton, my question is, does he live in our state or does he live in Wisconsin?
He lives in the state. He's applying through universal licensure, so he does have Arizona residency established.
So to me, it looks like he's just letting the clock run out to get that 1 year where he really is not going to have a full year of inspection performed in Wisconsin. So I'm not really sure this is the way the universal was supposed to be set up. So he's only been doing inspections for a couple months, moves here, and now he expects to get the universal.
Just to clarify for Mr. Cotman, he actually did hold a license. I don't have the date in front of me prior to that August 2023 date, but let it lapse and only recently renewed it in August, and therefore is requesting the hold on his application to meet the one-year requirement for Universal until August of 2024.
Okay, so what I'm reading here, though, he got his license in Wisconsin in August of 23, correct?
2013, yes. But he let it lapse, so the only current license he has from Wisconsin was since August of 2023.
Oh, okay. Did it say that in there, or did I just miss it? 2013? So he's been a license inspector for quite a while.
Yes, he just let the license lapse until recently.
All right. I was worried he only had a couple months. Okay.
I'm okay.
Okay. How about 8B, Mr. Bradley's?
Okay, I guess my question is there a benefit or what is the downside of just having them start the application process all over? They're looking for extensions. What's the advantage of that?
I can speak to that. The application fees are non-refundable, so if an applicant is short on experience or education, they may request the board to hold their application for up to a year so that they don't lose out on that application fee.
All right, well, that makes sense. Okay, I'm good with that one, too.
Then, Mr. Smith, if we would, we'll go ahead and approve those two agenda items, so if you'd like to make a motion on that.
Okay. I'd like to make a motion to accept agenda item 5A, 8A, and 5A, 8B on the consent agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Do we have a second?
This is Stacy Skanky. I'll second.
Thank you, Ms. Skanky. Any further discussion? All right. For those here in the room, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, those two cases are approved. All right, moving on to licensing matters, item 6 on the agenda. This one here is reconsideration of administrative closure. We do have attending virtually Claudio Valencia. Valencia, can you please let us know that you're online and you can hear us?
Hello. Yes, I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. All right. Julie, anything you'd like to cover as far as this agenda item?
I can just give a quick summary if the board would like. Mr. Valencia submitted an application for FE exam waiver. The application was evaluated and determined that did not meet the requirements to have the exam waived. The application was then closed, and Mr. Valencia has submitted a request for reconsideration by the board.
Thank you, Julie. Ms. Valencia, would you like to make a statement in regards to the reconsideration of administrative closure?
Yes. I have submitted all the information to the NCDES board. They have received all the information from my university, the transcripts. They have the transcripts with the certificate of qualifications translated. The information from my university is not translated yet, because since I have two backgrounds degrees, I'm a bachelor in physics and I'm an electrical engineer. So that information is over 200 pages, and NCES is asking me to translate all those pages, and it's very extensive and very expensive from my side. I'm asking the board to review my certificate of qualification, which is translated. The board of Arizona board should have it now handy, and they can see that I have these two degrees. I'm working in Canada. I'm a PE already in Nevada States as well. And I have PhDs in Canada, in British Columbia, and Alberta. So I'm not sure if that is possible to be re-evaluated.
Julie, would you like to share staff's position on this?
So in the packet, what Mr. Valencia was referencing is his official transcripts that have been translated and provided to NCES. However, they have not been evaluated for equivalency to a degree in the U.S. That's the reason the evaluator did not recommend for the FE exam waiver as well. So that is what would be needed, is that education credential evaluation. Staff have spoken to Mr. Valencia about using, you know, a different vendor other than NCES if it is costly or what their requirements may be different. Additionally, Mr. Valencia also holds his license from Canada, which will be, I think, hit the 10-year mark in June of this year. So there are options.
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sale. So found some of the same information while reviewing it related to the time that was mentioned there. It's very close. And knowing, you know, there's just a point that, you know, states are different. Nevada's rules are a little different than Arizona's in what's and how they provide licensing and such. So now I heard there was, Mr. Valencia, you mentioned in there that you're still in the process of getting one of your degrees translated. Is that correct?
Well, what NCES is asking me is to translate all the courses. As I mentioned, I have over 200 pages, and I'm trying to ask NCES if I can translate only a few portions of the document, because it's too much information. They said that maybe it's possible to translate only few information, not all, in order to reduce the amount of pages. But still, it's a lot of information from my side. I cannot, it's very complicated for me to afford that amount of money to translate the documents.
understand. I think with the, Mr. Chairman, I don't have any other questions. I think with the information that's provided right now, I mean, if anything, I'd be okay with potentially putting a motion forward to extend the time for more for these documents to be translated. If that, I don't know if it would or wouldn't help the case at all. But I mean, that's where I guess I would be at. This, has there been discussion internally on extending to wait for more further documents?
Kurt, you have something to add?
I would just like to say, this is Kurt Winter, that what is part of the application package from a foreign applicant is the requirement of an evaluation of the transcripts. Even if they're transcribed into English, they would still need the added evaluation for us to accept it. And as we just see it, without that, it is an incomplete application at this time.
And I'm only aware of the rule to place an application on hold for registration applications, not necessarily exam or waiver of exam applications.
Any further comments or questions from the board?
Sure. This is Gilmore. Ms. Valencia, what's involved in completing the translation? If NCES is going to not require a full translation, can you provide a summary? Because I think once NCES is satisfied, probably this board will be happier.
Yes, I can mention to you what is required from them. Give me a few seconds, please. I'm going to open my personal. They are classifying subjects. So what basically they are asking me to translate is only a portion of the information, which is specific objects, the content of the courses, and specify some other items. It's very hard for me to explain all the content of the documentation. This my university provide all the information, but it's very very detailed, and I'm asking NCS just to consider a few items to be translated. But still, it's very very long item.
Mr. Valencia, this is Mike Kalaika. Estimated time frame do you think it would take to complete that task that Mr. Gilmore was asking about?
I mean, the time to translate these documents?
Yes, and to satisfy the NCES requirements.
Well, I cannot afford that payment right now from myself. I need to ask my company, Fluor, if they can afford. Unfortunately, they said they don't have any means to pay that payment because it's not that simple. If I want to proceed with the translation of my documents, it has to be by myself, basically. So I don't know. I don't know if it's more convenient to wait till I turn 10 years of as a PhD in Canada, or continue with this application here, trying to ask you if you can waive that exam and continue to speed up the process. Because my situation is I think I have to wait till June until I turn 10 years as a PhD in Canada.
Right, then you'd be eligible under
the... My idea...
Go ahead.
My plan was to speed up the process now because the company is asking me to get the PhD in that state. But they cannot say that they're gonna support me in that part in the payment.
Julie, if we were to administratively close this case, would you prefer just? If we were to administratively close this case, what would be the next step then for Mr. Valencia with the alternate path, if that's the choice that he makes?
So the application is actually administratively closed already. This is his appeal to reconsider that closure. I would like to remind Mr. Valencia that the PE exam, either taking and passing or having that waived, is also going to be a requirement for registration, which would require that 10-year licensure in June. So.
So I have to write the exam anyway if I turn to yours.
You would need to either take and pass or apply to also waive that exam. There are two exams that are required for registration.
Yeah, so that for the exam one we're just talking about would be under ARS 32-126A3, it's on the folder, yeah, A3, where have been actively engaged in other state or foreign country as a professional registrant in the profession in which registration is sought for at least 10 years and holds a valid certificate of registration in good standing issued by that state or country. So that right there, if you had those qualifications through looking at your application here through the professional engineer in British Columbia, yeah, you know, June 3rd, 2014 is when you were licensed up there. Then 10 years from that point, if all the other items were address provided, then under ARS 32-126A3, one could apply for a waiver of your PE, the PE test, and just go straight to request for your PE license, and at the same time waive the FE as well under the same requirement. So right now what's in front of us is just the application to waive the PE exam pursuant to the other one, which is just the FE, and then you have the PE test. So,
well, actually, in this case, Mr. Sales, it's just the reconsideration of reopening this case since it's already been administratively closed. So based on what you've just described, what Ms. Pham has described, it sounds to me like there's really not a benefit to reopening that in this case, and to basically the applicant has to decide what they want to do. We can't make recommendations. However, there does appear to be an opportunity in June for this alternative way.
And as Mr. Chairman Scott Sales, again, where you're going to, if the intent is to get your professional engineering license, there would have to be another application based on what I'm seeing anyways at this point, because no application has been submitted for the waiver of the PE or anything of that nature, right?
Correct.
So, Mr. Donald, since this case has already been administratively closed, would the appropriate action of this board then be to deny the reconsideration as a motion?
Those would be the two options for the board, would be to either grant or deny the request for reconsideration.
Thank you. Well, based on that, do we have a motion from this board to proceed one way or the other in terms of approve or deny the reconsideration?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I'd propose a motion to deny the reconsideration of administrative closure under 6A1, Claudio Valencia.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Do we have a second?
Is Dana Klett a second?
Thank you, Ms. Klett. Any other discussion?
I just had a question on the, I know the fees that he's dealing with translation, that's beside it, but as far as our fees for applying and everything, is he going to have to be charged again to reapply at a later date?
Yes, unfortunately, application fees are non-refundable, as stated in rule.
Any further discussion? All right, we have a motion and a second. All those here in the room, those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right. That motion has been denied. Thank you, Mr. Valencia.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Scott Sales, so the motion as stated passed?
The motion to deny reconsideration was passed, okay. Yes. Reconsideration itself was denied.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, moving on to agenda item 7A. These are consideration of cases referred for formal hearing. In this case, these are considerations of signed consent agreements in lieu of a formal hearing. So if the board were to accept that signed consent agreement, it would vacate the formal hearing. So first case is 7A1, which is Mr. Harold Koonin. Those that are here, if you'd like to come forward and along with Mr. Donald.
And Mr. Chair, just as a reminder, board members, we have an independent advisor online. Mr. Seth Hargraves is our AAG for this portion of the meeting.
Mr. Hargrave, would you like to make a statement here regarding this case before we get moving?
I don't need to. I'm just available if the board has any need for legal advice.
Mr. Coonan, since you're here, would you please state your name and address the board?
Yes, my name is Harold Cunnan. I'm a home inspector. I've been doing home inspections for 20 years. This is the first time that I've had something like this, so it was a little bit shocking to see some of the words that were used that were pretty harsh with the initial consent agreement. I do appreciate having the opportunity of talking with your counsel and coming up with a settlement type of hearing. With me today, I also have my representative, Senator Wendy Rogers, and my business owner, Bill Haftal. I used to own the company. We've been in business for 20 years. Something like this affects our business, affects my livelihood. So I do appreciate the less harsh language that was used to say that I didn't do
inspection. After all, holding down, and it's been
for some reason, we've had a couple mic issues. We might need to use the one just over there. Go ahead, Mr. Turner.
Yeah, I'm a little bit IT also, so I understand what's going on. I'm an electrical engineer by training and experience before I came out, retired to become a home inspector. I introduced the other guests that are here to represent me. And again, I do appreciate the settlement conference that we had to kind of tone down the language. It really boils down to certain terms that are used that other people reviewing my report that's been kind of trademarked for a long time, they couldn't find those words. And now I would like to accept, even though I've signed this agreement, I'd like to accept less harsh even, and because I can change my report real easily to add those specific terms, which I have lots of words that say the same thing because I inspected homes for a while. Any questions?
Anything from the board? So are there specific elements in the signed consent agreement that you've already identified as far as what would be potentially in your interest to be modified at this point?
I haven't identified anything specifically. We came to an agreement that rather than saying I failed to do something, that I failed to use specific words to identify items. These are very easy things to change, like, for example, the first item is failed to put the address of our company, on, I think it was the inspection order agreement, the signed document, but it is represented on the report. So, you know, that's something that has been changed already, and we're taking care of that. The other solution that I've offered during the settlement conference was just to admit that I have changed in the software words that identify what the reviewers are looking for. It makes it easier for them to find the description in my report. It's duplicative of other words that I have that mean the same thing.
But you did sign the consent agreement as it was originally stated, correct? So you're essentially,
yeah,
just so that we're clear, your intent is to take that signed consent agreement off the table and then try to resolve this under a new consent agreement? Is that kind of what you're looking for?
I guess all I'm asking, I'll accept the signed consent agreement if the board decides that. I guess I'm asking the board to look at less harsh wording, because this does go on the BTR website. It does even though it's less harsh words, someone can Google it and find what looks like evidence that I failed to do inspection when the initial, and they'll not see that the initial complaint that the air conditioner didn't work was not valid, as it was written up. So I'm just asking the board to maybe consider if you have that capability. You know, if I'll accept the consent agreement that I signed, but if you have other capabilities of dropping it, I'd have it. Thank you.
I guess I'll look to staff as to what are the mechanisms by which that could potentially be done. If that's you, or
Mr. Hargrave, I'm going to let you answer that.
Well, it may be appropriate to hear from the state, Mr. Donald, regarding the state's position on this request first before I respond further.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Hargrave. Mr. Donald, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to say it's been a pleasure to have the opportunity to meet and work with Mr. Cunningham on this matter. It's still working. Okay. With the settlement agreement, we did indeed modify language to attempt to make it reflect a bit more accurately the situation with Mr. Cunningham. On page 3, under paragraph 5, there was language here that, and I'm aware of the situation specifically that Mr. Cunningham is addressing, that initially the complaint came in with a report that the air conditioning unit was not working properly and that there was a failure to report a leak found in a master bedroom causing damage to the ceiling. Under paragraph 5 on line 26, we did change the wording to state that the committee found the initial allegations of the complaint were not substantiated. And at the time, I believed that that would adequately alleviate that concern of Mr. Cunningham. By the same token, certainly if that language in and of itself under that finding of fact is not strong enough to alleviate that concern, the state would not oppose the language perhaps being amended to be more specific, as in, for example, the committee found the initial allegations of an air conditioning unit of the respondent failing to accurately report that one of the air conditioning units was not working properly and failed to report a leak found in the master bedroom causing damage to the ceiling were not substantiated. So certainly the state would have no objection to a further clarification to ensure that that Mr. Cunningham's concerns about reputation impact of this being posted are not met.
Mr. Cunningham, it would seem like that line number 26, the fact that it says initial allegations of the complaint were not substantiated, pretty much addresses that. I mean, we could add additional language, but the key is the allegations were not substantiated. To me, that seems like that's a pretty appropriate way of phrasing that. But if you have a difference of opinion, we'd like to hear it.
I'm not sure I quite follow that, because the initial allegations were that the air conditioner didn't work. That was unsubstantiated. That's what that statement is reading. Am I reading it right?
Mr. Donald, if we should have that on the mic for the walkie-talkie, just for the record. Otherwise, I know Kurt and others may not be so happy.
Certainly. I think there may just be a misunderstanding about the under paragraph 5 of the findings of fact, starting on line 25 at the end of it, the committee, the Enforcement Advisory Committee, found the initial allegations of the complaint were not substantiated. That's the complaint from paragraph 4, that complaint that alleging that you failed to accurately report that one of the air conditioning units was not working properly and failed to report a leak found in the master bedroom causing damage to the ceiling. So that's the committee found that that was not substantiated. And then it continues, while responding conducted an inspection of the home and believed his report met standards, however, the committee did find that in his report respondent failed specifically to, and then there's the technical issues that the committee did find. So it, and again, we could certainly make the language more explicit if.
So let me see if I understand it in engineering terms. The initial complaint said that I failed to report that an air conditioner wasn't working.
Correct.
And the review by BTR's committee found that there were words that said that in the report that said that the air conditioner wasn't working. So to me, that was unsubstantiated complaint.
Correct. And that's what
that's how you're reading it too?
Yes. And that's what the report is saying, that the initial allegation was found to not be substantiated, meaning that the committee, after reviewing the alleger's documents, found that your report did in fact document those appropriately. However, while the committee was doing that, there were a few additional items which are noted on page 4, at the top of the page, A through F, that there were some elements there that were not following the standard of practice, and that's what's noted on the top of page 4. But the original allegation, the committee is saying that they are not substantiating those.
Okay. I understand that now, and I guess I'm saying the important thing was that my report did document that the air conditioner wasn't working, but in addition, there's a further review by the board that found terms that were not found in the report. Those terms, though, I still stand that there's different words being used for those terms, and to remedy it, I'm offering and asking the board to accept that, I will have those in the report from now on. It'll be redundant, but it'll be in the report.
So that way,
to make this quick, if you want to accept the consent agreement as it is, I think I understand those words now.
Okay. So you would be amenable to us accepting the signed consent agreement in lieu of the formal hearing is what I'm taking from that statement.
Yes. Otherwise, I would be also accept if you would drop it completely, too.
Understood. Board, any comments or thoughts relative to accepting the signed consent agreement as is, based on these clarifications that Mr. Donald has shared? Okay. Hearing none, can I entertain a motion then to accept the signed consent agreement? And that would then vacate the formal hearing.
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. Make a motion that we accept the signed consent agreement HI23-002.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
And also to vacate the hearing, or would you like that in two separate motions?
No, let's do it as one
motion. And to vacate the hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Do we have a second?
Sure. Dana Clett, I second.
Thank you, Ms. Clett. Any further discussion amongst the board? All right, hearing none. All those in the room in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right, those online. Ms. Hovick?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, thank you, Mr. Cunningham. The signed consent agreement has been accepted and the formal hearing has been vacated. Thank you for your time. Okay, moving on to agenda item 7A2. This is case HI22-022.
Mr. Chair, Chairman. This is Scott Sales. Before this one starts, just a question really for those in the audience. It just dawned on me that we have all the windows, the blinds open behind us. Is it too bright for anyone in here? We can close the blinds if there's any concern from anybody in the audience. Mr. Chairman, I see no one complaining about it.
Then we won't make a motion on that effect. So. I think it takes a supermajority to close the blinds on the board. I'm kidding. All right.
Mr. Chairman, this is Colleen Lindgren. I just joined the meeting.
Thank you, Ms. Lindgren. So we have everybody here. Okay. We have someone here for the board. This is, if you wouldn't mind, just stating.
Dean Ray.
Thank you, Dean. Oh, Dean, you got to push the green button.
Red,
sorry, it's
oh,
red.
Oh, there we go. Okay, thanks. All right, Deanie Ray appearing for the board.
Thank you, Deanie. Let's see here. Do we have anyone else for the case, either online or here in person? Yes. Please come forward. Mr. Lane, you're the attorney representing Mr. Otto, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Otto.
Yes, hello, Mr. Otto. Yep. Just remember, it is walkie-talkie style, so you just have to push and hold the button. This little light will turn green when you speak. Do you need anything you wanted to start before we ask for the...
Yeah, we are proposing that you accept a consent agreement between the board and Mr. Otto in lieu of a hearing. The consent agreement is not quite the same as it was when it was first approved by the board. We removed the monetary penalties and increased the training component or the peer review component. Since this case involved technical violations, and it was sort of felt in the discussions with staff that the better result would be to have Mr. Otto get a little extra training to make sure that his report does match the current standards of procedure. And so that's what we're proposing.
Thank you, Dee. Mr. Lane, would you like to make a statement?
Yeah, just briefly. We agree with what the Attorney General's office proposal is. By way of history, Mr. Otto's a young man, obviously. He purchased a program, and his mistakes were errors of omission rather than commission. He's now corrected that, gotten a more up-to-date software, and we agreed to the two peer reviews.
So is there anything then that you are contesting as part of the signed consent agreement?
No, the only thing that was on the consent agreement, we were unsure of what the monetary exposure was. It's flying. It's the cost of investigation.
The latest offer that we made in the consent agreement that he signed, there is no monetary penalty, nor cost of investigation. And I think by way of explanation, it needs to be understood that when he's undergoing the peer review process, he cannot accept paid work while that's going on. So that itself is a cost that we took into account when we removed the penalty and the cost of investigation charges.
Thanks, Steve. So based on that, if there is no dispute and this board is able to accept the signed consent agreement, and we would then vacate the formal hearing that would otherwise be scheduled.
Yeah, we're in agreement with that.
Great. Well, board, any comments before we make a motion? All right. Can we entertain a motion then?
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I'd like to make a motion that we accept the signed consent agreement HI-22-022 and vacate the formal hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Do we have a second?
Stacey Skanky, I'll second.
Thank you, Ms. Skanky. Any further discussion? All right, hearing none, all those here in the room, if you're in agreement, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right. This signed consent agreement has been accepted by the board. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Hargraves. Thank you, Deanie Ray, and everyone else for showing up today. Mr. Cunnan, Mr. Otto, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Judith. Thank you. All right, moving on to enforcement matters. We'll start with case agenda item 8A1. This is case P23-115. Mr. Eaton, if you would so kindly share some initial details of this complaint.
Good morning to the board. On May 26, 2023, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent firm, using their architectural firm as the seller of 5535 East Broadway Road in Mesa, Arizona, and responded on behalf of respondent firm, has failed to return escrow after not being able to obtain financing for the purchase of the property. Respondent was noticed of this complaint, to which he did respond in writing. Board staff, through its conversations with the ledger, respondent and the ledger's realtor, was unable to confirm that respondent had represented himself as an architect during the term of the contract in the state of Arizona. In addition, the seller documents were also listed on the respondent's LLC, not as an architect or an architectural firm. Board staff also verified that the building permit drawings for Riverwalk Apartments for 5535 East Broadway Road in Mesa, Arizona, which were being presented as a possible building with the property, were stamped by an architect represented, registered, and active with the state board. Board staff concludes that this complaint is based on a contractual dispute between the ledger and respondent. Board staff was unable to locate any information during its investigation that showed respondent or respondent firm advertising as an architect or architectural firm in the state of Arizona. Board staff recommendation is to dismiss this complaint.
Thank you, Mr. And also, having reviewed these documents as the architect member of the board, I would concur that there was no evidence of any advertising as an architect or architectural firm. Does anyone on the board have any comments before we make a motion for dismissal? Hearing none, I'd like to entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I'd propose a motion to dismiss case P23-115.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Do we have a second?
Stacy Skanky, I'll second.
Thank you, Ms. Skanky. Any further discussion? All right. Those here in the room, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell? I believe Dr. Campbell, was that an aye? Okay, you're really quiet, but okay. Anyone opposed? All right, motion dismissed has been approved. Thank you. All right.
If I can, just as a point of order, are we elevating or kind of prioritizing those who are in the room?
We are. The next couple cases are in the room, so we'll go through those. Yeah. Yes, definitely. And so speaking of that, I believe we do have a representative here in person, Mr. Anthony Perez Varga, if you're here for case number 8A2, if you'd come forward. Okay, it shows it. Oh, virtual. Okay, it shows you were here in person. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Varga. All right, so this is case UK24-008. Mr. Eden, since you're already comfortably seated there, if you would give us a brief synopsis.
On September 29, 2023, the board received a complaint from an anonymous person alleging that the company is sounding a loudspeaker in a residential neighborhood and dispatching the police to new homeowners. Since this complaint came in as anonymous, board staff was unable to obtain more information from a ledger. Board staff made contact with Mr. Perez Vargas, who informed me that he is the controlling person for LiveGuard Tech, a video surveillance monitoring company that monitors construction sites. Mr. Perez Vargas stated that the device in question is a video monitoring unit with a live interactive talk-down system that allows the monitoring company to interact with the system to which it considers as an intruder. During board staff's conversation with Mr. Perez Vargas, he advised board staff that LiveGuard Tech is registered with the board of technical registration under Alarm Business Certification Number 21176. Respondent stated that he was the controlling person for the alarm business and did sales. Board staff confirmed that LiveGuard Tech LLC registered with the board is registered with the BTR board. Board staff also confirmed that Mr. Perez Vargas' controlling person status expired on June 17, 2021. In addition, Mr. Perez Vargas was never registered as an alarm agent. Board staff also located information regarding respondents' firm via Google search, advertising sales, and 24/7, 365 day a year monitoring. Mr. Perez Vargas also was advised of his expired status. Board staff has opened a complaint against Mr. Perez Vargas for his expired controlling person registration for not being registered as an alarm agent under complaint number AL24-007. Board staff recommendation for this case is to dismiss this complaint based on the lack of jurisdiction, as the complaint is relating to a loudspeaker in a residential neighborhood that is not governed by the board.
Thank you, Mr. Eden. Mr. Perez Vargas, this case is up for dismissal by the board. However, if you do have anything you wish to add, please feel free to do so now. You're on mute, sir. Nope, still can't hear you.
So he's unmuted, but there might be something wrong with his mic, perhaps.
Perhaps our volume. Dr. Campbell was also very quiet on our side.
Hayden, is it possible to check the volume of the speaker? The last two speakers online were a bit quiet.
Okay, let's try one more time.
Mr. Perez Varga, if you would say something just to kind of do a mic check, if you don't mind. Yep, you're really quiet. We're going to try to increase your volume. 1 second.
Okay.
Much better. Thank you, sir. Please continue.
Thank you for the board. Thank you for Mr. Eden for all the intelligent work with the board, on behalf of the board. Just wanted to state that the action of that Mr. Eden spoke about towards the end about our license being expired has been remedied. My license is back on current status. So it was a lapse of judgment that I attribute more to the challenge of COVID than anything else that we're undergoing at the time. And I commit to the board that the license will not expire any time in the future as we continue to do this work to help our communities be a little bit safer. And thanks for this time to hearing my explanation to you.
Thank you, Mr. Perez Varga. Again, just for clarification, this dismissal is purely related to the loudspeaker incident. It is not related to firm registration. We appreciate the fact that you have gotten that current. Thank you.
And to the board, that will be addressed in the next complaint.
Thank you, Mr. Eden. All right. If no no discussion by the board, can I get a motion for dismissal?
This is Stacey Skinke. I'll move to dismiss item 8A2, UK24008.
Thank you, Ms. Skinke. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I will second that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Any further discussion? Right, hearing none. Those in the room, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell? Anyone opposed? All right, this case has been dismissed. Thank you, Mr. Eden. All right, moving on here to case, we have someone in person here for case, agenda item 883, the Ledger Charles Dempsey. Please come forward. And if you would, please state your name for the record. And again, you have to use the little walkie-talkie feature, so.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Charles Dempsey.
Good morning. I'm Janet Dempsey.
Thank you both. I believe we have some information ahead of time.
In August, the board got a complaint that Silverhammer Inspections employee conducted a home inspection in Prescott. In September of 2019, they identified several items and that the owner of the company, when they reached out to him, failed to have any more contact with him, didn't address any of their issues. The original inspection happened in September of 2019. They contacted him in July of 2023 regarding the issues from the 2019 inspection. We sent it out to be assessed. When it was assessed, the recommendation is to dismiss the case against Silverhammer regarding this, and there's a second case open regarding the SOPs that's being conducted right now.
Thank you, Mr. Parrott. Please.
Again, thank you for the commissioners. This is a brand new experience for us. So we've been to commission meetings before, but never in this status. Our main concern was we had reached out to the owner of the company after, and first we didn't realize the statutes and became very educated on the commission process here in Arizona and the home inspector process, which, to be honest with you, most home purchasers have really little or no knowledge about until such time as they sit down and actually evaluate something when something goes wrong. After an initial couple of communications between us and the owner of the company, he provided us some documentation. He said we'd like to talk further. We said we haven't contacted a lawyer. We're just trying to see what's going on as far as the process and if there is any remedies that could be brought forward. Pretty much at that point, we were ghosted. No more communication. We said we were open to communication or phone call. We got nothing, which caused us to take the next step. We would have preferred to resolve the matter between the two of us as opposed to bringing it to a state commission, but here we sit today. The only thing that, in regards to the practice, the standards practice that was published online and also a part of the contract, is the failure to probe structural components of the house if they determine or look and see if items are deteriorating. In the report, it stated that there was siding, but the house is a log house, hence the siding is very minimal, and the logs they themselves are structural components of the home. They actually hold up the walls, they hold up the roof. Again, becoming educated on a log home, it's the first time for us. And the failure to note extensive rotten deterioration in the logs, we felt that the home inspector should have probed that, and had they probed that, we probably wouldn't have purchased the home because of the extent of the damage that was eventually discovered. And the reason it took us almost 3 years is because we were educating ourselves. We didn't know. We were learning as we were going along. In Arizona, to find a contractor who is willing to do work on a log home, believe it or not, there's only one in Phoenix. We eventually were able to locate somebody in up in the Prescott area who was from Michigan who worked on log homes. It took over 2.5 years to get somebody to come out and actually rectify the issue. So we appreciate the commission's time. I believe the communications had been open, we wouldn't be here today. Probably could have discussed this as opposed to taking up the commission's time.
Two, if we had known after we had this inspection that it'd be $30,000 worth of work, we would have never bought the home. We're retired on fixed incomes. So this greatly impacted us, and that's why we're here.
We appreciate your testimony here today. Mr. Smith, is there anything you'd like to add relative to this being the home inspector?
Well, I'm just a little confused why it's being dismissed if there's other items that, I mean, do we have an issue with the report or not?
Yeah, the report's being looked at separate in the 010 case. It was divided up. This was just against the owner and the firm. The other one addresses the SOP issues because they were done by the inspector itself.
So, Mr. and Mrs. Dempsey, there will be a further investigation, so this likely will come back to this board in a future board meeting.
So you'll
have to
see us again.
Yes.
We look forward.
Well, thank you very much. Again, this has been an education for us, and we appreciate the commission taking the time, the inspector. And the bottom line is we're able to manage this $30,000. Had this been a young couple, first-time home buyer, they would have not been able to possibly do the repairs and been left with a structure that was unsafe.
Right. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion before we entertain a motion?
So, okay, kind of just to summarize up what I'm hearing is there is an open investigation into the actual home inspector who did the home inspection. This case here, as I read it, was to the owner of the company who was not there on site. That they just happened to be the owner of the company.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right. Based on that, can we entertain a motion, please? Oh, you are. I'm sorry. Yeah, please come forward. You weren't on the sign-in.
I signed in.
Oh. Sorry about that. Yes, please do introduce yourself, state your name, and brief position on the case. Sorry about that. I didn't have you on my list here. Is this one working? Ah, okay. Now you're on the list. Sorry about that.
Good morning, members of the board. Good morning, Dempsey family. My name is Matt Maxwell. I'm the owner of Silver Hammer Inspections out of Prescott, Arizona. Jeremy, who was the inspector who performed this inspection, is no longer with my company, hasn't been with my company in many years. He went out and he started his own thing, and he's still doing it, and him and I are still close and good friends and in good standing. The reason I'm here today, and I'm glad I'm here today, is because I do want to address the complaints that were brought up and the concerns that these individuals are bringing to the board for your consideration for future people who are in this position. Number one, the one thing that I would like to say is, while you may feel like I ghosted you, my response, which was delivered to the board, was an email that was very concise, very clear about the position of my company. And when my company makes recommendations, it is expressly for the purpose of telling our clients to go seek professional help, to go find contractors to come in and give you additional information before you close escrow and make one of the largest financial decisions of your life. We on average find like 30 items, and I think we found more than that in this case. Everything that they brought up to us was addressed in one way or another, recommending that things were evaluated further, and none of that was done. And we can attribute that to an education process and never being in a log home, but a home inspector is not a guarantee. A home inspector is not a insurance policy, and we are not there to deal with the problems that come up almost 4 years later after a home inspection has been completed and you've been living in your house and haven't addressed issues that were brought up in the home inspection. So while I sympathize with the position of these clients, my company has a very solid reputation built on hundreds and might even be up to 1,000 reviews at this point of people who are satisfied with the services that we provide. When we came in and we talked with the board about the actual inspection, I went through and I found every single item on the bullet point in that guy's inspection in one way or another. There were a couple minor tweaks that they suggested, which are honestly irrelevant at this point because the guy doesn't use my software anymore. We're onto a different software and a different templating system 4 years down the road, and everybody's systems have improved as the business has grown and educations have furthered and things have improved. So, number one, I want to thank the board and thank the time of the investigators for taking the time to listen to what I've had to say and my responses and taking those seriously. To the complainants, I am very sorry that you guys are dealing with this, but when I'm brought information almost 4 years after the fact, all I have to go off is the documentation. All I have is the report. And when I'm looking at the report, it's hard for me to make customer service decisions based on $30,000 worth of complaints when my report is telling me that we told you guys about these things. And maybe not to the extent that you were happy with, but definitely to the extent where actions on your part were necessary before you made that decision and those actions weren't taken. Thank you for your time. I'm sorry for wasting it if I have, but I look forward to you know, having great relationships with everybody here in the future.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Board, I think we've heard from both of the parties here and the investigations. Is there a motion for this case? In this case, a motion to dismiss.
Stacey Skinke, I'll make a motion to dismiss item 8A3HI24009.
Thank you, Ms. Skinke. Do we have a second?
This is Colleen Lindgren. I'll second.
Thank you, Ms. Lindgren. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those here in the room, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ms. Hovick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, this case has been dismissed. Thank you all for your time.
Mr. Chair, Julie just told me that Mr. Solis is on the line right now. That was the consent agenda item we pulled.
Okay, fantastic. Mr. Solis, can you hear us? Kurt, do you know if he's on mute?
Hello.
Mr. Solis?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can now. If you would, please please state your name for the case. And I believe there was a question relative to some experience that I believe Board Member Sales is going to ask you about. But if you would, please just introduce yourself first.
Good morning, Board. This is Tambaro Solis.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sales, if you would, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Solis, for being able to jump on so quickly this morning. So in reviewing the documents that were provided to us in regard to your application to waive the fundamental exam, there was a resume that was provided that noted that you have a master's in civil engineering from December of 2011. With the information I was provided, or I think everybody was provided in the documents, it only shows a master's in construction management. So I wanted some clarification from you, if you could, to explain the note that it says master's in civil engineering.
Yes, of course. I think that the error was clarified through the recent middle of the application, but what basically is, they're under the Department of Civil Engineering. They have this program as a master's in construction management and a graduate certificate of the things in construction management. And I have both. It's not civil engineering degree. It's more of a master's in civil of construction management under the civil engineer department or profession.
Now that makes more sense based on the information on the transcripts. I just wanted to make sure a master's in civil engineering is quite a bit different than a master's in construction management. So I would recommend to potentially, in my opinion, modify your resume to not say that you have a master's in civil engineering when the transcripts do not denote that. You might have already corrected that as in process.
Yeah, it has been, yes, because the information was returned, or it was rejected. I made the modifications and resubmitted again with the correct information.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the quick turnaround on the discussion today, as well as the quick turnaround in updating the resume. We don't want anybody out there to pick up a resume and see some information that might give them a false sense of what the experience is. So, Mr. Chairman, I have no other questions, and I'm prepared for a motion unless there's any other discussion.
Board, is there any other discussion before Mr. Sales makes a motion? So this would be a motion to accept the application to waive the fundamental exams for Mr. Salvador Solis.
All right, Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I propose a motion to approve the application to waive the FE exam for item on the agenda 5A5A1 for Mr. Salvador Solis.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Do we have a second?
Bill Nesgood, I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Nesgood. Any further discussion? All right. Those of us here in the room in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ms. Hovick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right. That motion passes. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Solis, for calling in. We appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Sales,
thank
as always
you
for your diligence. So going back to Section 8 of our agenda here, we'd be looking at Agenda Item 8A4, Case HI 24-018. And I do believe we have the alleged Mr. Jeremiah Sanjeha. Are you here in the room?
Board, I don't see him in the room, but he may be online.
Oh, he's virtual. Okay. All right, then. Mr. Eaton, if you would, please give us a brief synopsis of the complaint.
On October 4th.
Go ahead, Mr. Eaton.
On October 4th, 2023, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent pried apart the roof and dismantled shingles across the whole roof. It is also alleged that respondent firm did not follow reporting standards of professional practice for Arizona home inspectors. Board staff noticed the respondent and received a written response from Ms. Harrington on behalf of respondent and respondent firm. During the investigation, board staff verified that Mr. Stansberry, who was the roof inspector, never identified himself as a home inspector as verified on the Nest camera, which was supplied by a ledger. Board staff verified the respondent Jason Payne, no respondent firm, was registered with the BTR, but registered with the Register of Contractors as a roofing company. Board staff also verified that Mr. Stansberry was not registered with the BTR board. Board staff did witness the State 48 roofing website did state that the company offered home inspections and BINSR reports. When board staff questioned Ms. Harrington about the website information, Ms. Harrington stated that she was unaware that the website stated that fact. Ms. Harrington stated that the web designer was responsible for the website content and the term home inspections was posted in error. Immediately, the verbiage was changed on the website by the web manager to state home inspections, to state roof inspections and BINS reports. Board staff verified the change. It also should be noted that board staff was unable to determine how long the incorrect information had been posted on the website. After speaking with the ledger, Ms. Harrington, on behalf of respondent, Mr. Stansberry, the actual board certified home inspector who conducted the inspection, in addition to a reviewing surveillance clips, photos, and numerous online reviews for State 48 Roofing, board staff was unable to prove that respondent or respondent firm had intentionally advertised its availability to perform home inspections or that any of its employees were certified as qualified home inspectors pursuant to the Board's Practice Act. Board staff recommendation is to dismiss this complaint.
Thank you, Mr. Eden. Mr. Sen Mejia, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. This case is up for dismissal because of the lack of jurisdiction that this board has, given that this is a contractor, not a licensed professional under the board. However, if you would like to make a brief statement, you are free to do so at this time.
I would, yes. So my name is Jeremiah Sen Mejia. I was still on property at the time when, during the home inspection process, the State 48 Roofing misinformed himself and inserted himself as being a home inspector. Also captured on the Nest camera when they went to the doorbell as being an inspector. Now, under the article titled 32145, title 32141, title 32128, and as well as the APC Rule 4, 30-102, and Rule 4, 30-301, as well as the standard practices that was adopted by the Arizona State Board of Technical Registration, the Arizona ASHI standard of practices, we were not followed. Now, during the discussion process, thankfully, we did not follow the ASHI standard of practices when doing the inspection. And the report provided to the homeowner as well as provided to myself through the realtor, they dismantled the roof. And it's also reported that they dismantled the roof. That's not part of the practice that outlined in the Arizona State Board of Technical Registration their practices. It's going to be visual inspection and they dismantled the roof. Often during the time, they also broke the bottom of the machine as well. Now, under as well as previously still on the website, they are still advertising that they do BINSR reports. Those are home inspection reports by Arizona Realtors. They should still not be providing BINSR reports when they are not inspectors. Now, under the rule, I think it's rule, ETC, rule four, 30-301, I believe it's that rule. You cannot do an inspection, and then within an inspection, request that you get capable of work. That's not part of the inspection. There's a waiting period, I believe it's 2 to 4 years, before you can go ahead and offer to do the work on the inspection. That's for the rule. I think it's under Rule 4301. So they're a violation that. Again, they're still our gifted and doing some inspections on our website. And second too, under
Mr. Semya, just to be clear, and I would like Mr. Smith to weigh on this as our home inspector, a BINF report is not a home inspection report. Again, the case before us here is whether or not there is a reason to dismiss this case, and the reason before us is the fact that they are not registered under this board. We do not have jurisdiction over them. The website, from what Mr. Eden had said, has already been modified to remove any confusion related to home inspections. But Mr. Smith, if you would please speak to the BINF and why that is not a...
Yeah, we're going to take that. I was going to comment on that. The January Duncan, they acted as inspector. They do this whole inspection. That begins the statute. They acted as inspector. And they did an inspection to the property.
Mr. Smith, if you would hold for 1 second, I'd like Mr. Eden to just respond to that. And then
to the board, I'd just like to make some corrections. As we stated in the beginning, with the alleger's own desk camera, the respondent, Mr. Stansberry, who is the roof inspector, can be seen addressing the alleger when he arrived at the house early. The alleger also invited Mr. Stansberry in after he told him he was the roof inspector, and he says, no, there was no need to enter the house. The inspector did come later that day. Mr. Stansberry never entered the house as if he was doing any type of inspection to inspect any kind of components, which would have made him seem like a home inspector at that point. Also, to the roof and damage, the inspector who did the roof inspection with his home inspection also stated that the roof was damaged and concurred to damage that was related in the roofing report from Mr. Stansberry.
Thank you.
Can I comment on that? The second inspector came
if you would,
after
Mr. Semya, if you would, please, I'd like to hear from our board member first before you respond, so please hold that for a moment. Mr. Smith, please.
Okay, yeah. So as far as the inspection process goes, and I can see where if somebody puts, as a roof company, puts home inspections, they're just stating that they are going to inspect the roof. Okay, so I think that's just an easy error. A lot of times buyers request a roofer to come out and take a look at it because they're going to do an in-depth inspection. They're going to take the tiles off. They're going to look at the paper, the flashing. So that's very common. I mean, you want them to do that to see what conditions it is. The Binzer is just simply 48 Roofing is going to, they would be called out by a realtor saying, hey, there's some roof issues. Can you take a look? These are the issues that the inspector found. How much is it going to be to repair it? So that's kind of what
that's concerned. That's correct. That same part is correct. You're absolutely correct. After the whole inspection is done, they can really call out for a roof inspection out to the property. You're absolutely correct. But first, if the home inspector, then you call out to have a inspector look at the roof. If you find damages by the home inspector, that was not done. And they're still advertising as doing inspections beyond this reporting for before it's being damaged to the home.
To the board again, that roof inspection was requested by the potential buyer, not by anyone else. It was for the potential buyer.
Thank you, Mr. Reed. Orlene, yes, please.
Two points. The respondent is online, virtual, if you would like to hear from him. And just to clarify, State 48 Roofing and the respondent are registered with the Register of Contractors. So it's a contracting company, not a home inspection company.
Well, since we have the respondent, yes, please, if you would identify yourself and make a brief statement on behalf of your case.
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can. We can also see you.
My name is Cameron Stansberry. I was the roof inspector that came out and actually performed the inspection. It sounds like the complaint is that I identified myself as a home inspector, but I think that's pretty cut and dry. I did not do that. I actually refer to myself as the roof inspector. I am not the home inspector, and if that's the bulk of this complaint, I mean, it's on camera, so I'm not sure what else we're talking about.
Thank you, yes, and I believe that's what Mr. Eden, our investigator, was identifying as well, that there isn't evidence to support this, and the fact, again, that this company is registered with the Registrar of Contractors, not this board. We don't have jurisdiction, and so that's the reason for the dismissal. So unless there's anything further from any board members, we'd like to keep things moving and entertain a motion for dismissal.
Mr. Chairman, this is Keith Smith. I make a motion that we dismiss HI 24-018.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Do we have a second?
Stacey Skanky, I'll second.
Thank you, Ms. Skanky. Any further board discussion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. Based on the information provided, this seems similar to if a plumber came out to inspect some information. The home inspector said, hey, you might want to get a plumber to take a look at this, or any other type of an electrician or anything like that, you have to give someone else to come out there and take a look at things. So that was just my general discussion on what I'm hearing here and the case.
Absolutely.
And if I could make one more note, I would just say for anyone who's on the call, if you're buying a house within that's 18 to 25 years old, I recommend a roof inspection to check that under there.
Thank you. We won't chalk that up to marketing there on that one. We appreciate that. All right. I don't think there's any further discussion. So we have a motion. We have a second. Those in the room, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right. This case has been dismissed. Thank you, everyone. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for your time.
All right, in the interest of those that are here in the room, we're going to continue taking some cases out of order. In this case, we'll be looking at agenda item 8C1, case HI 24-013. That's Mr. James Sullivan. Mr. Parrott.
Sure.
Now, we do have Mr. Sullivan, the respondent, online. Mr. Sullivan, can you hear us? If so, please just say something so we know that we can hear you.
I can hear you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right, we're going to hear from our investigator first. Mr. Perry, if you would please.
Did the security board receive the complaint that...
Microphone. Maybe the one in the middle. Man, these things are dropping like flies today. Okay, try this again, sorry. In September, the board received a complaint that the respondent conducted a home inspection in Florence and failed to report on plumbing deficiencies, and the water supply to the washing machine is turned off, so when he opened it, it caused water spray. Board staff sent it out to be assessed. A letter of concern was warranted by the assessor for 6 minor deficiencies, and advised that the initial complaint had no merit, should be dismissed. Thanks, Mr. Perry. Mr. Sullivan, this case is basically looking for resolution by a letter of concern. That is a non-disciplinary action on behalf of this board. However, as a respondent, we would like to hear from you for a moment. So if you'd, again, just state your name and a brief statement relative to the case.
My name is Jim Sullivan. We've been doing inspections for about 14 years. And... it was stated in the report that, you know, we do not operate the valves on washing machines and run them. We felt very concerned about the homeowner, and I went out and met with him, and I paid for repairs. His wife is in hospice. She was in the home. We just felt really bad that he was distressed, and so we wanted to, whatever it took to make him feel better and make it right, that's what we did. And then as far as the issues that Eric pointed out, we were actually grateful so that we could make those adjustments in our software so that we don't, you know, have those deficiencies anymore.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Appreciate that. Board, any comments?
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. So all of the issues that were found, you've made corrections to your software. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Again, this is a complaint proposed for resolution by a letter of concern. So
If there isn't any further board discussion, I will entertain a motion.
If he's already addressed everything that we would be saying is of a concern, I think the letter of concern may not be relevant.
Orlean, do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, a letter of concern would be non-disciplinary in action, so it wouldn't be public record unless they do a PIR. It would be for just kind of like a letters indicating what those issues were.
And also, if there's a complaint in the future, this would be referenced at that point.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I make a motion that we accept
the staff's recommendation for
letter of concern.
Yeah.
For HI24-013.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Do we have a second?
This is Dana Clett. I second.
Thank you, Ms. Klett. Any further discussion? All right. Those of us here in person, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right. That motion passes. Thank you. All right. Moving on to the next one with in-person or virtual representation is agenda item 8C2, case P23116, Mr. Ali Homsi. Ms. Crawford, if you would please give us a brief synopsis of the complaint. Oh, I think you have to use the middle one. That one seems to be not working.
All right. Good morning, Board. The Board received a complaint alleging that after being hired on or about April 7th, 2023, and being paid for an RV garage project in Scottsdale, Arizona, respondent failed to provide a full set of structural drawings within the agreed-upon timeframe of 3 weeks. All parties of the project were interviewed, and this case was sent for 2 independent case assessments. Based on the case assessor's reports, they reported concerns with the lack of a written contract, as well as communication from respondent to alleger. The case assessors did not believe that the lack of communication rose to the level of gross negligence, but they did express concern with it. Based on their assessments, board staff is recommending a letter of concern regarding respondent's communication with clients.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. We have didn't specify here attendance with the respondent, Mr. Ali Homsi, or the alleger, Mr. Thomas Cashman. Are any of those here in the room, or Kurt, is there anyone representing the case online?
I'm here, Thomas Cashman.
Thank you, Mr. Cashman. If you would please just give a brief synopsis of your position on this case.
Well, my position is I hired a structural engineer with the person that was going to construct the garage, and when Mr. Homsi kept questioning me on what I wanted, I explained to him multiple times that I was not going to talk with him directly, I was going to talk to the contractor to make sure that we weren't crossing lines. Very polite, did everything that I was supposed to do. He could have asked any question that he wanted to ask any time that he had the opportunity. That he needed a question answered, he never did it. He would respond to me in text messages, and I would respond back to him, basically saying, "Ali, you need to talk to Angel, the guy that's constructing the garage."
Thank you, Mr. Cashman. And so we are proposing resolution of this case with a letter of concern for Mr. Homsi due to the communication issues in this case.
That's fine, but on or about the day I signed the contract, there's another complaint out there from this board because something very similar has happened to this before. So I appreciate the letter of consent or letter of concern or whatever the letter is. But again, this is definitely a pattern with Mr. Homsi.
Thank you, Mr. Cashman. Obviously, we can only act on the information that's been presented and is before us on this particular agenda item, but if there are further actions, this board will investigate those as appropriate.
Right. There definitely is.
Thank you. Board, any further discussion? If not, we'll entertain a motion to issue, resolve this complaint with a letter of concern.
Mr. Chairman?
This is Colleen Lingard. I just have a quick question. I mean, I'm not really sure what we're concerned about going forward. I know letters of concern aren't considered disciplinary, but it seems kind of redundant at this point, given the information we have.
I believe in this case, Ms. Lingard, it's related to the communication or lack thereof between the engineer and the client.
I guess just the way that I'm reading this, it just seems unnecessary to me. I don't see why we couldn't just dismiss this, but that's my...
Well, Ms. Lindgren, if you were the consumer, you'd probably have a different thought.
Board, if I could interject,
please, Ms. Crawford,
this is based off of the case assessments provided by the two case assessors.
Okay. Well, we can either do a motion to dismiss, as if Ms. Lindgren wishes to put that forward. If that were to not pass, then we could obviously continue with the resolution with the letter of concern. So I'm going to open up to the board for a motion either way.
Sure. This is Jack Gilmore. I think based on review of the investigation by staff, communications is pretty weak. There's no contract, and I think our board's responsibility is to protect the general public, and Mr. Holmesley should have put together some kind of a contract that outlined his schedule and the scope of services. And it might have been all verbal, but for Mr. Cashman's sake, that's inadequate. So I think this is very appropriate to issue a letter of concern.
Mr. Gilmore, are you then making a motion to that effect?
I'd like to make a motion that we accept the staff recommendation and issue a letter of concern for P23-116.
Thank you, Mr. Gilmore. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I would second that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. Again, I would echo Jack's information on the timelines and protecting health, safety, and welfare. They're going into a contract, and they think it's okay, but when you don't have any documents, and then the time frame that it took back and forth, you know, I don't think we have the full story of, you know, the contractor and the other stuff going back and forth, but if there was something of urgent nature for this, per se, if the structure was damaged or being fixed or some other type of thing, one would want this thing resolved as soon as possible and to make sure everything's safe, so... That's just my general discussion.
Thank you, Mr.
Sales. I have one question.
Yes, this is Mr. Cashman.
Yes, it is.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Wouldn't the cashing of the check be considered a binding contract?
Yeah, unfortunately, we can't comment on that. We are only able to comment relative to the action before us, which is issuing a letter of concern. So, sorry.
I understand. Thank you.
Thank you, though.
I'd just like to have a comment on the record just for my basis for voting the way I'll vote, which is I feel as though this is a consistent practice of the board to issue a letter of concern when there's similar type of activity, kind of a unprofessional manner.
Thank you, Ms. Kanky. Any further comments? If not, those of us in the room here in favor, please say aye.
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 Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Nay.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone else opposed in the room? We have one nay. All right. That motion will still pass. Thank you. All right. Let's see if we can get a few more cases in before we take a brief recess here. But let's move on to case 8C4. That is case HI23-040, Mr. Mark Kenny. I believe, Mr. Kenny, you are online. If you would, please confirm that you're able to hear us. Kurt, do you know if he's there?
Mr. Chair, he would be available for any questions.
Oh, okay, so he's not actually online. Okay. Again, this is another proposed for resolution for letter of concern. Mr. Eden, please give us a brief summary.
On May 8, 2023, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent, after conducting a home inspection in Sun City West, Arizona, on or about February 27, 2023, failed to report on the truss damage to include that the truss cracked and separated from support, which could easily be spotted from entry up ceiling access due to the location of truss being within a few feet of a scuttle hole. Respondent was noticed of this complaint, to which he did send a written response. A case assessment was prepared and sent to the assessor. The case assessment was received and recommended that an EAC committee meeting be held to review the evidence in the case as well as the 11 additional deficiencies. An EAC meeting was held. The committee did substantiate the original allegation. The committee identified six deficiencies through the assessment process. The committee determined that the respondent's home inspection report failed to meet the standards of professional practice for home inspectors. However, the committee unanimously opined that the deficiencies were minor reporting errors, and the EAC committee recommended a letter of concern. Board staff is recommending a letter of concern for this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Eden. Board, would you want to hear from the respondent? Again, this is a letter of concern. It's non-disciplinary. If not, we can proceed to a motion.
Mr. Chairman, so Scott Sales, I think we've opened it up for all the other ones to discuss if they want, so I would propose to allow anyone to speak.
So you would like to hear from the respondent?
If they would like to speak.
Okay.
Mr. Chair. They indicated that they just wanted to listen. If the board had any questions, then.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay.
Speak.
Do you have any questions for the respondent, Mr. Sales?
No.
Then would you?
And board staff would also like to add that the alleger no longer wants to participate in this process.
Okay. All right. Would someone like to make a motion to this effect?
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I'd like to make a motion that we accept the letter of concern for, this is the HI-23-040. However, I'd also like to add that they review the SOPs and update the reporting software.
Would that be potentially in the letter of concern?
Yeah.
Okay. So just to clarify, your motion is to resolve the complaint through the issuance of a letter of concern. Not to accept a letter of concern.
Okay, correct.
Okay, just making sure. Mr. Dahl.
And just for reference, in a letter of concern, the board can't tell anybody specifically to do anything. The board can outline their concerns. Whether or not anybody chooses to do anything is entirely up to them, as the board has no authority to order anything in a letter of concern.
Thank you, Mr. Dahl. Appreciate that clarification. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I will... second the motion, but at the same time only, I'll second the portion of the motion that is to issue a letter of concern and the other items of updating the SOP and stuff.
Recommendation.
I would not entertain that part of the motion.
Wait a minute.
I think we would have to, Mr. Smith, I think you'd have to amend your motion in order to, we can't second a half of the motion. We'd have to issue a new motion.
Okay, I'd like to recommend a letter of concern for HI-23-040 with the recommendation to review the SOPs. Am I saying that correctly?
So, Mr. Donald could correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe you could, in a letter of concern, let the individual know that they may wish to consider... reviewing or something like that, but not that you do it, but you could phrase it as a...
Recommend
Mr. Donald is...
I think typically, and Orlean may correct me if I'm wrong, but I think typically in the board's letters of concern, or actually Kurt may be able to correct me on this, is non-disciplinary, it would simply be for the board to identify the items that... while not constituting an issue per se, would constitute an issue where they continue potentially. Identify things that the board believes may be a problem in the future, but without recommending any particular resolution for that due to the nature of administrative law and the potential changes to the board statutes and rules over a period of time.
Yeah, question, Mr. Donald, or Kurt. Did Mr. Kennedy attend the EAC hearing?
Yes, he did.
Oh, so he's aware of the results and recommendations?
Yes.
Okay. Does he get a copy of the final report? Not the assessments, just the report?
You mean my report?
Well, EAC issues a report from the committee. Is that report shared then with the respondent?
I did speak with him about his deficiencies and the recommendation from the EAC committee, yes.
Okay. So, Mr. Smith, it sounds like the respondent is aware of what those concerns are. So if you wanted to amend your motion I'm sorry. So if you would so kindly...
If I can add some clarification, so the home inspector did receive the case assessment, went through the EAC process, and as the investigator just mentioned, was aware of what the deficiencies were found at the EAC. The letter of concern, if approved and issued, would have the specific SOPs missing.
Perfect. So then, Mr. Smith, if you'd be so kind as...
All right, third try. Here we go.
Third time's the charm.
All right. Like to make a motion that we accept the letter of resolution with letter of concern for HI 23-040.
Good enough? That's perfect. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Sales?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I will second that motion as I heard it to issue a letter of concern.
Yes. All right. Any further discussion? If not, all right. Those in the room, those in favor, please say aye.
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 Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Nay.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone else opposed? We have one nay. All right. The motion still passes. Thank you. Let's see if we can get through the last of the in-person items under 8C. We've got one more, and then I think we'll take a little 10-minute recess, if that's all right with everybody. So in this case, this is P24-027. Mr. Cartel, if you would please give us a brief synopsis of the complaint. And also just confirming that respondent Chad Zielinski, are you online? Kurt, do you know?
Yes, sir.
Wonderful. Thank you. We're going to hear from our investigator first and then would then like for you to make a statement. So, Mr. Cartel, if you would, please.
Thank you. So on July 4th of 2023, the board received information alleging that on or about June 29th of 2023, respondent submitted a renewal application in which he answered no to the question asked if he had been convicted of a felony or misdemeanor since his last renewal and failed to disclose a criminal conviction. According to public records, respondent pled nolo contendere for a hunting violation in which he was cited for hunting with an unplugged shotgun in Texas, is related to case number 5121-550 in Lamar County, Texas, on or about September 14th of 2021. In this case, Mr. Zielinski was cited by the hunting warden for hunting with an unplugged shotgun in Texas. That is a Class C misdemeanor. Mr. Zielinski received a citation to that effect and immediately paid the citation without seeing the judge. Board staff got a copy of that citation and immediately noted that the citation did not indicate that it was a misdemeanor. It made no indication whatsoever of the level of the violation. The citation also did not include any indication of the statute that was cited as far as what number to find it under their code. Board staff reached out to the court that took care of this citation. The court verified that Mr. Zielinski did pay the citation without seeing the judge or without contacting the court by a telephone. He just paid it online. So he was never instructed of anything regarding that. The court also verified that the receipt that they gave to him did not include any information regarding the level of the violation being a misdemeanor, and that no other information was provided to him by the court to that effect. The courthouse also clarified that the Class C misdemeanor in Texas is on the same level as a minor traffic violation as far as severity. Board staff also reached out to the, I keep wanting to say Gagman Fish because that's what it is in Arizona. In Texas, it is the, I apologize, just to make sure I'm accurate. Let me pull this up real quick.
I think it says Parks and Wildlife.
That is correct. We reached out to the Texas Parks and Wildlife. They declined to provide any statement, but directed staff to file a records request, which we did. What they provided indicated that the only thing that was provided to Mr. Zielinski was that citation. To make a long story short, he was never provided any information to make him aware of the fact that this is a misdemeanor. So we're recommending a letter of concern regarding this action, being that he could not have reasonably known that he was convicted of a misdemeanor violation.
Thank you, Mr. Cartel. Board, any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I'm just going to have a tough time on this one because looking through the documents, you know, it doesn't say misdemeanor and these other items. So, I mean, if he really reasonably never knew he had a misdemeanor, then I don't know how you could check a box one way or the other if you really didn't know. And then diving in, it seems like it was a pretty complex to find out that it was, in fact, a misdemeanor relatable to a traffic ticket. So, I mean, I'd like to hear from the rest of the board as well on the discussion for this one.
Ms. Kanky.
Stacey Skanky, I'm kind of on the same vein of thought. I think it's, in this circumstance, unreasonable for us to even do a letter of concern. I know it's not disciplinary, but even to that, since he had no reasonable way of knowing, I would much rather entertain a motion to dismiss.
Okay. I'm sorry, if I may add something, I would like to clarify that the board rule that we are considering does not include any indication as to motive, as it would be knowingly, recklessly, or whatnot that you would see in criminal law. That being the case, it is technically a violation since he was convicted of a misdemeanor. But the accommodation that we're requesting that the board make was that he couldn't have not reasonably known that he was.
Understood.
Yeah, sure. This is Jack Gilmore. I agree with the other board members. I don't think there's anything that I've heard or seen that warrants even taking this to a letter of concern. I'd like to see this thing dismissed as well.
This is Colleen Lindgren. I agree with Mr. Gilmore and Ms. Kagan.
Thank you, Ms. Lindgren. Well, then, would someone wish to make a motion then to dismiss this case rather than issue a letter of concern?
This is Stacey Skanky. I can go ahead and make that motion. I'll make a motion to dismiss item 8C5P24027.
Thank you, Ms. Skanky. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Sure.
Ms. Lindgren, I'll second.
Beat you to the chat, sorry. Thank you, Ms. Lindgren. We have a motion, a second. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. Your recommendation is a letter of concern. Why didn't you ask for a dismissal?
That was because our statute or our rule does not include the indication as to it having to be knowingly or recklessly or any other level of intent.
Thank you. Okay. And obviously this board has the final determination, putting my Mr. Donald hat on here for a second, that to interpret that appropriately. So we have both a motion and a second for dismissal. Any final conversation?
Chair, I'll just, Scott Sales, just reiterate, based on the information, I don't believe that it was even known that it was a misdemeanor or anything of the such.
Understood. Mm-hmm. All right. All those in favor here in the room, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right. Motion for dismiss passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Cartel. With that, I would like to entertain a 10-minute recess for the board, unless anyone has an objection to that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I see we still have a few people out here in the audience that have cases. I don't know if there's...
We do, but there's quite a few of them, so I think that we may have some challenges if we don't take a break here for a few minutes.
Okay, I understand what you're laying down. Okay.
Thank you. All right, so it is currently 10:55, 10:56, so let's plan to reconvene, let's say 11:10, so...
Mr. Klicka?
Here.
Mr. Sales?
Present.
Mr. Nesgood?
Here.
Mr. Gilmore?
Here.
Ms. Klett?
Present.
Dr. Campbell?
Present.
Ms. Hobig?
Present.
Ms. Lindgren?
Present.
Ms. Skanky?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Ms. Boho?
Here.
Hey, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Hayden. Appreciate that. We're going to go ahead and continue cases where we have folks here in person. Next one I've got here is agenda item 8D1. That's case HI23-015, Mr. Eric Kahn. I believe Mr. Eric Kahn is online.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. All right. Mr. Eden, I'm not sure which mic's going to work, so give it a shot there.
Hopefully this one will. On December 9, 2022, the board received a complaint from a ledger outlining numerous SOP deficiencies. The respondent was noticed of this investigation, to which he did respond in writing. An assessment of this complaint was assessed. The assessor identified 26 deficiencies and recommended that an EAC meeting be held to further review the evidence in this case. An EAC meeting was held in which 7 of the original allegations were substantiated. In total, the committee substantiated 23 deficiencies. Due to the excessive amount of deficiencies, the committee recommended that respondent pay a ledger restitution in the amount of $275 for the home inspection. A consent agreement was prepared for this case. The respondent did agree to the terms and did sign the consent agreement. Staff's recommendations is that the board accept this signed consent agreement.
Thank you, Mr. Eden. Mr. Kahn, I know we have a signed consent agreement here. The board is going to vote on in a moment, but if you'd like to make a brief statement on your case, please do so.
I'm not going to make any excuses. There were things I was deficient on. I had made corrections to my inspection software to remedy those problems in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate that. Board, any further comments? If not, we'll entertain a motion to... accept the signed consent agreement.
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I have a question. Mr. Kahn, on these reported deficiencies, were these things that your report just didn't have in it, or were you, or was the inspection deficient by you not understanding what you're supposed to be looking at?
No, I understood what I was supposed to be looking at. There were some conditions at the house. There was a heavy volume of personal storage, which I did not put in my report, which is my fault, that kept me from seeing some of these items on the report. Some of the items that I commented on were part of the deficiency, but I went through the hearing and I understand that, you know, my verbiage and the way I worded it in my report was not proper.
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith again. I think there's an awful lot of deficiencies here on the report, so I would like to suggest that we have a peer review just to make sure the report is reporting is met.
So that would require us to reopen the consent agreement that's already been signed.
I thought this was proposed. This is a signed one?
No, this is resolution with signed consent agreement. The next one down is a proposal to offer a consent agreement.
Well, I just think there's only 32 items that you have to report on. 28 are on this list. So that seems pretty excessive to me.
I guess the question would be, is it worth amending?
Yeah, there's 84 items, but this is a third.
So, and you have looked at what is part of the consent agreement that was signed in terms of the disciplinary action, and you feel that's not sufficient?
I just think, you know, as far as the public goes, I think it's acceptable to, you know, expect that the inspection report meets all these parameters, and I think a peer review is a simple way to do that.
Orlean, have we had, just for consistency, when similar situations have come up before, has peer review been one of the items that was recommended or included in any previous consent agreements of this level?
I'm trying to think of one. Let me just look at the
EAC committee. Did they recommend peer review or no?
No, they did not.
Did they know that was an option?
They should have.
They did. They did. They were aware of the options, and one of them is peer review. And they didn't believe it warranted a peer review. They didn't recommend one.
Well, if this, all right, here's the thing, though. If this report came along with an initial application, it would be denied. So I think we've got to look at it that way.
Chair, if I may, the EAC committee report under committee recommendation, committee recommended that respondent reevaluate the standards of practice and adjust his inspection template to meet the standards of practice and undergo peer reviews. So it does call for peer review. It's suggested.
It's just not listed on the five bullet items here on the staff report. So, Mr. Smith, based on that, does that address your concern, if it's already in there?
If we had a hard time just finding that, so I think it needs to be spelled out, like we normally do at the end there, peer review.
Well, again, this is the consent agreement is a separate document. This is just the staff report that shows the five bullet points.
Okay.
So you, if it's what Mr. Gilmore was saying is it's already in there as part of the findings from the EAC.
Perhaps just let have staff verify the language that's from the recommendation as well as the consent agreement. Just one moment, please.
No problem. One moment, everyone, while we have staff just verify that.
Chair, I'm sorry, I don't see anything in the consent agreement that calls for peer review.
And just for the record, Mr. Chair, unless it's in the consent agreement, it would not be a part of any order from the board.
Correct. I just wanted to double check whether it was in there or not. So if it's not, then I believe Mr. Smith would have the option to propose a separate motion to modify the consent agreement. If that motion fails, then we would vote on the current signed consent agreement to accept. Is that correct?
What the board would have to do, as before right now, is a signed consent agreement. The board would have to first have a motion to reject this signed consent agreement, and then the board could offer a new consent agreement for the same terms but with additional terms or with alternate terms if it wanted, but it would first have to either accept or reject the signed consent agreement.
So if we put forth a motion to accept the signed consent agreement and it passes, then that would be it. We wouldn't then offer a new one per Mr. Smith's recommendation, is that right?
Correct. If the board if you look at it as a flow chart, if the board accepts the consent agreement, that's the end. If it rejects it, then the board can make a counteroffer, it can offer a new consent agreement, and it could be for an identical consent agreement, however, with a modification to the order terms to make them whatever the board feels is appropriate.
Thank you. So did we confirm, Kurt, whether that is in the, it's not in the consent agreement?
A peer review is not in the consent agreement.
Thank you, Marlene. All right, well then, I think we need to follow that process then would be the first motion to be entertained would be whether to accept the signed consent agreement as is. If that passes, then that's it. If it does not, then there would be an opportunity for Mr. Smith to offer a modified consent agreement that would include peer review. If I'm capturing that correctly, Mr. Donald.
It could be either a motion to accept or a motion to reject. Yes.
And then just once more, just so I understand, if peer review gets added, he's not allowed to get money for that. Like, he's not allowed to charge for those peer reviews. Is that correct?
Correct. And he would not be able to do home inspections until he completed the peer review.
I would also like to say that this would be an offered consent agreement in which he may or may not sign.
Whereas currently we have one that is signed with the penalties minus peer review at this point. Well, then we'll open up to the board for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to accept the consent agreement as signed.
This is Stacy Skinke. I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion, a second. Further discussion? All right, hearing none. Those present here in the room, all those in favor, please say. Actually, you know what? This might be a little more complex. Let's do a roll call if you don't mind, Hayden.
Mr. Kalenka?
Aye.
Mr. Sales?
Aye.
Mr. Nesgood?
Aye.
Mr. Gilmore?
Nay.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Skanky?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Bohol?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. That's 9 in favor, 2 opposed. Kurt, I have here on the list that there potentially is someone for 8E1, Ms. Susan Limp. Do you have anybody online for that?
I do.
I'm here.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Link. Then we're going to go ahead and move on to agenda item 8E1. This is complaints proposed to offer a consent agreement. So this has not been signed unless that has changed in the last 12 hours or so. So with that, Ms. Crawford, if you would please give a brief synopsis, and then we'll hear from Ms. Link.
In July of 2023, a respondent submitted a renewal application in which she answered no to the question asked if she had been investigated and/or disciplined by any regulatory agency since her last renewal. Respondent failed to disclose Board Order P21-004, which became effective on May 26, 2021. In response to this, a proposed consent agreement was drafted and provided to the respondent, which she has not signed as of this point. She did wish to address the board, however.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. Ms. Link, if you'd please identify yourself and provide your input on this case.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. Susan Link. I'm the principal of Link Architecture, and I've been conducting business in architecture in Scottsdale for 20 years with no business troubles, no legal troubles. So when this was brought to my attention in 2020-2021, it was a subject of great concern to me. I did fail to check the correct box in my renewal this year, and that was a complete oversight on my part. I have been acutely aware of the past consent agreement that I signed in 2021, and much like the first professional that presented today, I'm aware of that record, that public record, and it does have very strong language. So I did not want to sign, I would prefer not to sign this consent agreement, and my case is simply that I accidentally either checked the box or didn't check the box. It was a complete oversight on my part, and this is not any attempt to hide my knowledge or recognition of the case that did take place in 2021. Further, I submitted a little bit more of a statement to you guys, which I'd love to know if you were able to receive it and read it. I submitted it about a week ago, explaining a little bit of the details of what happened in 2021, and that is justification for why I'm asking for this current omission on my part to be excused, as opposed to settled through a consent agreement this year. In summary, in 2021, I did not renew my firm registration for 2 years in a row. I had not and was not completing any work in Arizona during that time. And it just really fell off my radar that I did not renew my firm registration. I did, however, maintain continually my individual registration, and I have since obtaining that in the early 2000s. What the investigator at the time, Sean Thacker, said to me was a couple things. He said, the existence of my, at that time and to this day, very out-of-date website constituted offer of services. I wasn't actively using the website, that there was no other means by which I was offering services. I was neither pursuing nor completing work in Arizona during that time. Mr. Thacker then went on to basically explain to me my options moving forward. And he strongly urged that he was the place of Caitlin Crawford in this case. He strongly urged that I sign the consent agreement, that I not attend the board meeting and address the board as I am today, stating that I could very well lose my license. These were strong words for someone that's never had any violation, never a whisper of legal anything. I'm very well regarded in Scottsdale. My work has been published. I'm active in the AIA. I serve as a mentor to young architects. Up and up professional conduct all around, right? So this was a little unnerving, and I did sign the consent agreement. I did feel bullied, and I stated that on the phone this fall in a call with Orlean, and I stated that on the phone with Ms. Crawford as well. So I was really wanting to resolve that as expeditiously and cleanly as possible. I took Mr. Thacker's advice and did not represent myself as I am today. And so I just wanted to convey the manner in which that case brought up in 2021 has affected me. And I would never willingly or knowingly not disclose that in my renewal to the Arizona Board because of that heightened level of awareness. But I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Link. The letter that you're referring to, is that the one dated January 24th, 2024? If so, that was included in our board packet, so the board members have had an opportunity to review that.
Thank you. I'm sorry to reiterate the message.
And just a question I have. With regards to, we can't speak to Mr. Thacker. He's no longer a staff member at the board here, but I'd be curious if you feel that the process by which this case has been investigated for this current case has been positive, or if there have been any issues related to that. This current case, not the one from 2021.
It's been very positive. Ms. Crawford hasn't always been in, and so we played a little bit of voicemail, but she's been very responsive. And like I said, I also had an opportunity to speak with Orlean on a time when Ms. Crawford wasn't in. So no, you guys have been great on this case. Thank you.
Thank you. And Orlean, as far as consistency with previous cases where previous disciplinary action hasn't been disclosed, I'm assuming that this offer of consent agreement is consistent with those similar parameters as past cases.
That would be correct.
Board, any comments?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. Just looking through the documents here, it seems like it's probably an unfortunate error, but at the same time, the form isn't onerous, and there's a lot of boxes and some items to check. And whenever I have to sign something, even if I've done it a number of times in my engineering practice, it's just you got to read it every time to make sure you're good. And this just happens to be a yes/no checkbox that, in my opinion, was checked wrong. And this is unfortunate, but here we are with what to me needs to happen.
Any further comments?
This is Haley. Just so I can be clear, the discipline she failed to report is incorrect firm registration from a few years ago.
The case is relative to not disclosing past disciplinary action.
And the disciplinary action was incorrect firm registration.
Correct.
And Orlean, you mentioned that this new consent agreement is similar to other consent agreements when people mark that box, yes.
Have failed to disclose any prior disciplinary action.
Is there a scale for which that discipline relates to?
We do have a matrix we use as a guide to determine administrative penalties for.
For how egregious the discipline is?
Correct.
Would a letter of concern be possible? That's just a question I have.
Again, one of the things that we try to do, Ms. Link, is make sure that we are consistent across similar disciplinary actions. So if we were to start to take cases and reduce or increase the penalties associated, then we would not be consistent with other past cases. So that's one thing that we try to be very careful about on this board. Is there any, excuse me, is there any discussion relative to what the respondent had issued regarding a letter of concern versus the current offered consent agreement? I'm personally of the opinion that, like Mr. Sales, that, unfortunately, the box was checked, but it's an important box. And as an architect, we are responsible for a lot of small details which are critical. And so it's important that we stay vigilant when it comes to protecting the health, safety, and welfare of the public. And re-registering with licensure is a key part of that step.
I would agree with those comments, Mr. Pleka. I would just like to state that I understand this firm registration to be a much less egregious situation than other discipline actions, and that box is very important no matter what. But I do see that those types of disciplines to be different in my mind.
That's why I asked. It lumps me in with the people committing fraud, practicing above and beyond their means, other cases that we've heard today. This really stems from the existence of a website during 2 years where there was no work, and then, frankly, a strong opinion placed on me through the previous investigator to not represent myself and try to have that dismissed. Ms. Crawford has advised me there's no way that action can be undone, so no problem. But I just wanted to share that in light of that. That's why I was asking for a little bit of leniency in this case, understanding that you have to be consistent, understanding that details matter in architectural practice. I have full understanding of that. Thank you.
And again, this is merely a proposed consent agreement. Then again, if Ms. Link, if you choose not to sign that, then you would then have the option of proceeding to a hearing, in which case those facts can be then presented to administrative law judge. That result would come back to this board for either acceptance, modification, or rejection. But again, that the motion that we would likely issue, and again, we'd be waiting for a board member to do that, would be to offer that consent agreement. It's your choice whether you choose to sign it within the 30-day period or not. Orbeam.
I just wanted to add some clarification. So the renewal application does state, have you been investigated or disciplined by any regulatory agency since your last renewal? It does not indicate what type of discipline. It just indicates whether there's been discipline.
Understood. I understood the intent of the question. I just accidentally checked the wrong box, but I do fully understand the question.
Board, do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I would propose a motion on P24-029 to offer the proposed consent agreement as included in the packet, and if not signed within 30 days, proceed to a hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Any further discussion from the board? All right. Hearing none, we have a motion and a second. All those in the room, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Langren?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Yeah. Stacy Skinky, nay.
Okay. And Haley as well?
Haley Vohall, nay.
All right. So that's two in opposition, nine in favor. Motions to offer the consent agreement passes. Thank you, Ms. Link, for your time today.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, we've got a few more in person, and then we'll kind of go back.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Chairman. I think my vote was recorded incorrectly. I voted nay.
on that last one.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Ms. Hovick, on that one. Oh, sorry, Lindgren, excuse me.
Lindgren.
Sorry, Lindgren. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. If I may, before we entirely leave this agenda item, and understanding that the board has just voted, it might be appropriate to take a moment for an executive session for legal advice with regards to this type of an issue.
Certainly. Unless anyone from the board has an objection to that.
Well, it would require a motion and second.
Mr. Chairman, since I made the original motion, I'd like to hear a little bit more in regard to that. So I'd like to propose a motion to enter executive session pursuant to ARS 38431.03A2 let's go with ARS 38431.03A3 to receive legal advice on agenda item 8E1.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. That's a motion. Do we have a second?
Stacey Skanky, I'll second.
Thank you, Ms. Skanky. All right. I think we've discussed, I don't know if we have to have any further discussion other than the vote, so any further comments? Judith, you're pointing, so I don't know.
You're voting for executive session. Right?
Correct, yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, we have a motion, a second. Yeah. You looked at me with a pointing look, that's why I just want to make sure.
Okay. Right.
Okay. All right.
I wasn't sure what the final vote was on, so thank you.
Okay. All right. All those in favor here in the room, say aye.
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 Aye. Ms. Hovick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed to going into executive session? All right, hearing none. We will retreat. Retreats, right? Thanks, everyone. It looks like we have all three of our virtual board members, but just to confirm, Ms. Hovick, are you there?
I'm here, yep.
Ms. Lindgren?
Here.
And Dr. Campbell?
Present.
Okay, so we are back. All right, thank you, everyone. The board went into executive session to get legal advice. Mr. Sales, do you want to reiterate the comment that you made in the session?
Well, the general discussion based on the legal advice. I'd like to just, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I'd like to expand upon why I made the motion that I did and why I voted aye, and then also interested in anybody else's on the board's thing. So to expand a little bit upon...
Which cases? Just for the record.
Yeah, for the record, this is case on the agenda 8E1 P24-029. So just to expand a little bit upon how this one and the motion that was put forth with the checkbox. So kind of to talk a little bit about some of the other discussion from earlier in the day related to another case where someone had a citation and that one was dismissed. In that case, in my opinion, the information provided didn't denote anything that it was a misdemeanor or really anything of a, say, legal infraction, so to say, based on the checkboxes. In this case here on P24-029, we had a case where there was a clear checkbox, as Orlean mentioned during the discussion on what the checkbox text said. I haven't memorized it, but I know that it was discussed there. And that in this case, Ms. Link at the time knew there was a case that had been come before a board, in this case, the AZBTR back in 21. And so based on the knowledge and information provided, that's why I put the motion forward to carry this one through with how it was quite a bit different than the earlier case heard today. So with that, I'd like to open up if there's anybody else on the board would want to speak on that.
Chair, this is Jack Gilmore. I would agree with Mr. Sales. I think the previous case was involving Mr. Zielinski, P24027. He did not know that he had committed a misdemeanor. So in the documentation we had to work with, it was pretty clear that he was completely unaware of the occurrence. So that was easy for me to support that dismissal. For Ms. Link, she was aware that she had caused a violation, and so that was the basis for my vote, because she was aware and failed to disclose that. Accidentally doesn't matter, but at this point I think it was the appropriate staff recommendation, and our vote was appropriate as well.
Thank you, Mr. Gilmore. Any other comments before we move on with our agenda? All right. Next on our agenda here for those in person is moving on to complaints requiring board guidance. This will be agenda item 8F1. This would be Roberto Hernandez. I believe we have the ledger online. Ms. Mesra Morales? If you're there, would you please identify yourself?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful, thank you. All right, first we're going to hear from our investigator, Mr. Cartel. So, Mr. Cartel, if you would, please.
Thank you. So on December 2nd of 2022, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent and respondent firm engaged in the practice of architecture on the fourplex design project in Glendale, Arizona, without being registered as an architect and without firm registration. Board records show no indication that respondent has ever registered with the board. Board records show that respondent firm's registration with the board expired in September 8th of 2022. So the complaint that came in from Ms. Morales was in regards to the length of time that Mr. Hernandez took on this project, and in regards to the fact that his designs were rejected by Glendale. Being that he's not registered as an architect, we investigated it initially regarding whether he practiced architecture or not, as opposed to the quality of his work. This is a fairly complicated case, so I think it would be beneficial to go over the makeup of respondent firm first, so we have an understanding of that. The firm is Draft Your Dreams, LLC. It's essentially a partnership between Mr. Hernandez, who is a non-registered designer, and Roy Noggle, who serves as the firm principal. Mr. Noggle is our principal, registered with us. He is a registered architect. However, Mr. Hernandez signs paperwork as the owner of the firm and is listed as a statutory agent with the Arizona Corporation Commission. So we looked at this case initially regarding his architectural work on the property. The project was initially presented as a commercial project as a fourplex apartment building. However, it was decided that it would be changed to a residential project for a single family home. That was confirmed by both Mr. Hernandez and Ms. Morales. That after discussing it, they decided to go with a residential project for the sake of getting her construction loan. In that time, Mr. Hernandez had prepared and presented a commercial project contract to Ms. Morales with the understanding of the fourplex design, and then later on, it was changed to a residential project. Now, speaking with Mr. Hernandez, his side of this was that he prepared both so that she could see what it would look like, but the understanding was that she was to sign the residential contract. According to him, she accidentally signed the commercial contract and presented it to him, but had expressed her desire to move forward as the residential project, so he moved forward with it as a residential. According to what Ms. Morales had told me, she signed the contract as a commercial, but later on, based on a verbal agreement, they decided to go with the residential. At any rate, they both, according to what we had learned, they both agreed to move forward with it as a single-family home residence with the potential of adding to it later on. So after that was established, Mr. Hernandez made the design, presented it to the city of Glendale. Glendale initially rejected it for several reasons. One of the reasons was that the design included a beam that was over 20 feet long, and according to their policies, that requires a stamp of a structural engineer. His designs didn't have any professional stamps in it whatsoever, and he did acknowledge that he prepared those prepared the plans and moved them forward. By the end of it, the case the plans were not fixed and moved forward. Mr. Hernandez's side of that was that there were several problems with the property, one of which was that beam. The project died, according to Mr. Hernandez, the project died because a ledger or Ms. Morales had failed to get the grading and drainage plan done that was, according to him, was on her side to take care of. But at any rate, the project did not move forward. Mr. Hernandez's statement is that he did, prepare the project and present it, which satisfied his end of the contract. At any rate, he was a non-registrant designer working on a single-family home residence, which falls under an exemption. So again, we didn't get too far into the quality of his work, being that he's a non-registered person working on an exempt project. What we did look into, however, was that initial contract that was presented to Ms. Morales was a commercial project, did list it as a fourplex, and offered engineering services as well as the architectural services. Now, the firm is registered as an architectural firm, with Mr. Nagel being the principal as an architect, but he is not registered as any type of engineer, and the firm is not registered as any type of engineering firm. So with that issue in mind, we set it up for assessment, two individual assessments. One assessor opined that it is an issue that the contract offered engineering services, and the plans do include engineering plans. The first assessor opined, however, that respondent is outside of the board's purview, being a non-registrant member of a registered firm. And in that assessor's opinion, the responsibility for the violation falls on Mr. Nagel as the principal. The other assessor differed slightly in opinion. The other assessor opined that being that respondent signed the contract himself as the principal, brought responsibility upon himself. So we had an EAC meeting. In the EAC meeting, we outlined further discrepancies in the plans. They were not complete plans. They were not structurally sound plans. But when we came down to the conclusion of who's responsible, who's not, the committee was split 2-2. All four of the committee members unanimously opined that Mr. Nagel, as a principal, is responsible for what violation a non-registrant member of his firm commits. That being the case, we have already opened an investigation looking into Mr. Nagel's participation in this. Two of the committee members opined that Mr. Nagel is solely responsible. The other two opined that Mr. Nagel is responsible and Mr. Hernandez can also be held responsible for offering services that he was not qualified to offer. So we are presenting to the board for board guidance, being that the EAC committee was split on whether Mr. Hernandez can be held responsible or not held responsible, being that he's a non-registrant member of a registrant firm.
Thank you, Mr. Cartel. That was a very, very good and detailed summary. Before we open up for board discussion, we'd like to hear from the alleger. So, Ms. Morales, if there's additional information beyond what Mr. Cartel has already offered, please do so. And if you would, once again, state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Myra Mesa Morales. He actually hit it off pretty well. The only thing I do want to kind of clarify is, so the reason to why we switched over to residential, I guess, is because I only qualified for a certain amount due to the fact that he did take forever. He neglected my project. Initially, I was qualified for over $750,000 for my construction loan. Due to the fact that he ghosted me and he pretty much took my money, he stopped responding. It backed me up about 14 months. I was just paying interest only on my land loan at the current time. We switched it over to a duplex, which was considered residential because I was going to live in one and rent out the other. But technically, we had verbally agreed then that he was going to sketch out the duplex, and then he would eventually, once that was set, he was going to sketch within the same price, same contract, he was just going to go ahead and sketch out the other two once we were done with that project. So I don't know if that's how you guys are looking at it, like residential, but it was not just the one home. It was still going to be my three points.
Duplex or triplex?
Overall, it was going to be a triplex, but we were going to start off with a duplex sketch first, get that built, and then go on from there. And I was told before I started, he was recommended for a lender. I'm a realtor myself. So the lender did recommend him that he was a licensed architect, that with plans like these, you couldn't use unlicensed. Just because I know, you know, family members, you know, people that also do sketches and stuff like that, they're not licensed. She's like, but unfortunately, we can't use them. They have to be licensed. So then I searched them up and everything looked good. But pretty much Roberto, he pretty much took off with my money. He wasn't responding to me. He lied to me multiple times. I have proof of all of that, text messages, email. He neglected my project for months.
Thank you very much, Ms. Morales. Just for the benefit of the board, when we talk about a quadplex or a duplex, a quadplex would be considered a commercial project. It would fall under the International Building Code, and that does, with few exceptions, does require a registered architect and engineers to do that work. If it's a duplex, it falls under the International Residential Code, which is an exempt building, which does not necessarily require an architect or engineer unless there are certain criteria that, for example, like the city of Phoenix, they require that you have an electrical engineer even on a house if it has 400-amp service or more, as an example. So cities can go above and beyond the minimum requirements, so that's one piece. The part that really kind of concerns me is the fact that Mr. Hernandez had originally offered a commercial contract as a non-registrant, and that his name was on that contract and not Mr. Noggle. And so that, to me, at least from my perspective, is a matter that definitely is of a concern, because that is offering services that he is not allowed to provide as a non-registrant.
Correct. And I am aware that because of everything that was going on, I've met with multiple people. He's scammed multiple people with saying he's rich. And he's done the same similar things. He grabs their money, feeds them a whole bunch of stories and lies, and then he never refers back. Exactly what he did to me.
Thank you. Board, further conversation?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sale. So I just want to clarify, I heard a triplex in there too somewhere.
I think that was a misstatement. It should have been a duplex. So
okay.
Four or two.
All right. So we're just talking about four or two. And then I know, Mr. Cartel, there was a lot of names and who's got different positions. in there. So, Mr. Hernandez, did you say he was the president of the firm, or how is he connected inside of the firm again?
Thank you, Ed. Before I get into that question, I would also like to specify what was presented to us as far as what the project was. The plans themselves, it's listed as a single as a detached single-family residence. That's what's on the plans that were presented to the city of Glendale. What was described to us was essentially a home with a guest house or casita that could be used as a second unit later on. Regarding roles in the firm itself is registered with the board. There was a lapse in registration, which is being addressed in the current investigation with Mr. Noggle. But it was a registered firm as a registered as an architectural firm. Mr. Noggle is listed as our principal. He's registered with us as the principal of the firm. Now, where Mr. Hernandez comes into play is in the paperwork Mr. Hernandez presented. He listed himself as principal, and with the Arizona Corporation Commission, he is listed as a statutory agent. I guess it essentially would be a partnership where Mr. Noggle serves as the liaison, if you will, for us. But it sounds like Mr. Hernandez does the actual work. The question at hand is, as far as our rules and statutes, being that it's a registered firm, if the non-registered member of the firm is responsible as well as the registered principal, or if it's all on the registered principal. That's kind of where the EAC committee was having struggles.
I guess my question would be, if it's, and just to confirm, Mr. Hernandez is the one who signed the original commercial contract, correct?
Correct. Both contracts are essentially the same except for the listed project itself. They both had the same body, and if I remember correctly, he did sign both of them himself.
Yeah, so he would be in violation of board rules and statutes, the fact that he was signing a contract that he did not have the legal authority to sign in the first place based on the fact that he is a non-registrant. At least that's my perspective. I'd be curious to get the rest of board's perspective on that, too.
And Mr. Chairman, Scott Sales. I mean, if it said principal on the line and he signed on it, then I could see how it potentially could be tied into our rules and governed there. But to me, it's... I'm not going to get into the statutory agent thing. That's a whole other set that's not in our purview of discussing. But, you know, it seems like it all rolls up to Roy Noggle on here. And if there's already an open case for that, it seems just an internal, some quality control there that you got people inside of your firm signing contracts when the principal of the firm should know all of those items. And I'm assuming that contract made it to him. And... you know, that's a discussion for another case. So it's tough for me to figure out how Mr. Hernandez would. I guess I'd like to know more about the principal line. If the principal line that he signed is in accordance with our rules, I'll go look it up in here and see what they've got.
Well, I think the bigger concern is what Mr. Carcel said was the fact that he signed as the principal of a firm, of an architecture firm. He can't be a principal of an architecture firm if he's non-registrant.
If I may speak to that, it depends on what, we're kind of splitting hairs, but it kind of depends on if he is signing as the principal on our end or the principal on the Arizona Corporation Commission's end. He could be misleading or accurate depending on what side of that perspective you look at, and I imagine he'd probably didn't specify either way with a ledger.
Chair, this is Jack Gilmore. Ms. Morales, did you at any time have any discussion or a meeting with Mr. Noggle when this engagement?
No.
I'm sorry?
No.
So you never met him in person or discussed the project?
No.
Good.
To the best of your ability, Ms. Morales, did you believe that Mr. Hernandez was an architect at the time, or was it made clear that he was not an architect?
100%, I was under the impression he was an architect. He promotes himself on all social media platforms as an architect.
Well, to me, then, that would seem like it's worth an further investigation of Mr. Hernandez relative to that case in parallel with the case with Mr. Noggle that's currently ongoing.
We did look into how he advertises. On his website, he is listed as the CEO of the company, but the website also lists Mr. Noggle as the in-house architect. So as far as advertising online, it lists both.
Mr. Chair, this is Mr. Smith. Ms. Morales, are you out the $24,000? There's been no, have you asked for a refund or anything?
He doesn't respond to me anymore.
So you are out 24?
Yeah, 24 plus, I mean, from when I submitted my complaint, it looks like I can only go after my 24, but he also made me pay a reviewing fee. Of $3,000 and some change. I'm not too sure. I don't have all the numbers here with me, but I believe a total of $27,000. But if I can get at least my $24,000 back, that would be amazing.
Mr. Chair, this is the first time I've sat in on something like this. Is there a way to refer this for possible criminal activity or anything?
I would look to Orlean on that one as far as past examples. We have referred cases for criminal prosecution before.
Yes, we have, and then the agency would review it, and then they would decide if they would like to proceed with prosecution.
Can we have Scott's opinion?
Mr. Donald's right next to you there.
I don't want to whisper.
The board can refer any matter to an agency for review. I do not know whether or not the agency would take the matter on. However, the complainant would not be forestalled from any other action by anything this board does. So, for example, the complainant could certainly proceed with a civil suit if that would be a more appropriate jurisdiction for this, or could file a complaint directly with the Attorney General's office as well, with the Fraud Division.
But as of right now, it sounds like Mr. Noggle is currently being investigated by board staff. Is there additional investigation that would be beneficial for Mr. Hernandez that will help give you some guidance from this board if we knew that there was still potential more information that you haven't obtained that could potentially be obtained?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. We did get contact from the city of Glendale. I have a handful of statements from Mr. Hernandez. Not really sure what else to ask him, to be honest.
Any other comments, board, as far as questions or potential?
Sure, just a clarification. Ms. Morales, you told us that you wanted a duplex designed. The documents show a single-family residence.
With a casita.
With a casita, and that's what the first site plan shows. Did he explain why he's only doing a single versus what you requested as a duplex?
Because my loan, since the lapse of length, the interest rates went up, so I qualified for a lot less. My loan can only now take, it wasn't a commercial loan anymore. It was more of a construction residential home. So I had to submit it as a home and a casita in order for it to be approved through underwriting.
Thank you. I think this is going to be pushed more to a lot more in-depth research with Mr. Noggle. I think our hands are kind of tied to some degree.
I can speak a little bit more to Mr. Noggle. I did speak to him on this investigation as well. He acknowledged that he is the principal of the firm. However, he stated he was not directly involved in this particular project. The current investigation is investigating the alleged violation of failure to provide responsible charge of the firm and in effect, offering services through the firm that he's not qualified to offer.
Well, it sounds to me like it's probably best that we allow this investigation, Mr. Noggle, to carry forward and potentially
whatever action, if any action, we take on Mr. Hernandez may be better informed once we get further information on the other case, unless anyone has an objection and wishes to take other action here today.
So are you sort of suggesting just to keep that open and keep pushing it down the road, or would you like to make action today to do something on this?
That is totally up to this entire board. So, Ms. Kanky, what's your opinion on that at this point?
I think it's a close line, and seeing that he's a non-registrant, I'd feel more comfortable dismissing any potential action against him as an individual, but continuing on the investigation for Mr. Noggle and the firm itself.
I'm thinking for Ms. Morales' benefit, since there's other issues outside of her board purview on her complaint, she might be wise to seek her own legal advice rather than have the board give specific direction.
Which we can't do anyway. So.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mr. Smith. I think this is a legitimate claim here, and I think he's a non-registrant. He's acting like an architect, so why don't we just pursue that as a non-registrant?
Holding oneself out to be an architect, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
That could definitely be a motion if you wish to present that.
Well, it would be good for discussion. I mean, or do you want to do a motion first?
Well, we're going to have to make a decision of one kind, whether it's to dismiss, continue this to a future board meeting, or present other action or direction to staff.
If I may speak to that that statement a little bit, we don't have any evidence that he himself directly claimed to be an architect. He does not on his public website. And Ms. Morales may be able to correct me, but if I remember correctly, she was referred to him as an architect by a third party person. I believe that was a real estate agent.
A real estate lender.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. Yeah, looking at the information in here and the bio from the website, it's clear, you know, a BA in architecture, and some of the other wording in here doesn't come in there and jump right out and say, you know, licensed architect or. So I guess one thing in there, and maybe you know this, Mr. Klicka, it says AIA with a small S. I'm not familiar with that acronym. Is that an architecture?
That's the American Institute of Architecture Students, which is not a professional organization. It is an organization you can join as a student while in school. So that would not have any bearing. It's not like AIA membership, which you get when you're licensed.
Okay. And then for full consensus, if nobody else is on page 4246 of the packet, it has his, Roberto Hernandez's name, and underneath it says CEO and AIAS. So that's why it's kind of a weird option.
It's rare to put that on there. I don't think anybody's seen anybody do that, but there's nothing wrong with that in that respect. So, all right. Well, we have potentially a motion to dismiss with the, and staff is already investigating Mr. Noggle, so. Ms. Kanky, if you want to make that motion to continue this meeting forward, it's up to you.
Okay. I will go ahead and make a motion to dismiss item 8, F1, which is P23058, to dismiss any further investigation or complaint against Roberto Hernandez.
This is Colleen Lindgren. I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? And again, the reason we're doing this is because the individual is a non-registrant. There has been no evidence to support that individual is holding themselves to be a licensed architect or registered by this board. Is that correct, Ms. Kanky?
That is correct. And further informing my decision is the potential allegations or claims against Mr. Noggle for his management of a non-registrant.
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. And then, you know, as that other investigation expands, if something comes back against Mr. Hernandez, then I'm assuming then the staff would open up a case on that. Once more additional information is available, but at this point, I'm in agreement with what's being said.
Is that a second then?
I'm sorry, that's right. We're in the discussion.
That's right, we're in the discussion. I apologize.
I'll third it if you want.
No, I think two is plenty, so... If there's no further discussion, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor here in the room, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Nay.
Okay, we have one opposition, 10 in favor. Motion passes. All right, moving on. This is going to be agenda item 8F2, which is case HI23-041, Mr. James Jimmy Riley. And I believe you guys are in person, so please come on up. All right, Ms. Crawford, if you would please give us a brief synopsis, and then Mr. Riley will have you identify yourself and give your position.
Thank you. I will try to make this as brief as possible. A complaint was received reporting that respondent had failed to report on various required items during two separate home inspections in Arizona. The complaint also alleged that respondent, who is a civil engineer as well as a home inspector, called out mobile home for lack of tie downs and then installed said tie downs post-inspection. The original complaint also alleged that respondent owns a pest control company and treats for termites found during home inspections. So after receiving this initial allegation, this case was sent for a case assessment, which reported that there were no missing or deficient SOPs in either of the home inspection reports presented. The case assessment, however, did request additional follow-up regarding the two other allegations involving the mobile home tie-downs as well as the termite pest control. Board staff has repeatedly reached out to Alleger multiple times. When Alleger initially filed this complaint, they had reported that they'd like to remain anonymous and that they didn't necessarily want to be involved in this complaint. After reaching out for further information post-case assessment, I have not been able to receive any additional information that would gain any insight into either of those two allegations pertaining to the pest control or pertaining to the mobile home tie-downs. Due to the lack of additional information that was provided, board staff at this time is unable to recommend a substantiation regarding the tie-down concerns. However, board staff is requesting guidance from the board to determine if treating termites post-home inspection would be considered a repair and potentially violate R4-30-301.01.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. Mr. Riley, if you'd like to state your name for the record and your position on this case.
Thank you. My name is Jimmy. I apologize. I stood here for 3 hours and watched that and didn't do it right. I apologize for that. My name is Jimmy Riley. I'm the owner and operator of Night Vision Inspections, certified home inspector, also registered professional engineer. This complaint was anonymous. When the complaint was filed, it included documentation stating that the report was the full report. When right on the front page of that particular document, which was a summary, it says this is not the full report. If you want the full report, you need to verify and look at the whole scenario. When it was assessed, the assessment individual, the home inspector report assessor, wrote in regards to his conclusion, the respondent's reports are exemplary and have no deficiencies. They're informative, easy to read, and exceed the standard of practice requirements. So our reports are, I believe, as I understand, not an issue at this particular point. I think the only issue that's before the board is the issue associated with termites. Termites are outside the scope of a home inspection. In other words, this board doesn't even regulate termite inspections. That's regulated by the Arizona Department of Agriculture Pest Management Division. So when a home inspector goes and does an inspection, there's often a termite inspection at the same time, because in order for any institution that's lending money to lend money, they have to have a clear termite report. So we have a company, it's called Fortress Termite Protection. It is registered through the Arizona Department of Agriculture Pest Management Division. And if a client wants a termite inspection from us, we inform that client that the termite inspection is going to be performed by Fortress Termite Protection, not by us. In our inspections, which you have a copy of our inspection, in our inspection reports, the ones that I believe you have a copy, the assessor did, but under the issue of pests, it says right on there, and this is specifically for the one associated with this complaint, It says the home inspection included a termite inspection. Termite inspection was provided by Fortress Termite Protection for night vision inspections. The official termite inspection report, which was generated as a result of the termite inspection, is provided under a separate cover. Reference the official termite report to determine if termite activity or adverse conditions were noted during the termite inspection. And every termite inspection includes a report, which I don't believe you have this document, but it is a document from the Arizona. It's basically the form that has to be completed for the Arizona Department of Agriculture Pest Management Division. It basically says right on it where the inspection was, who it was performed for, and in this case, it's performed. I'll give it to you. I don't know if you have a copy. I don't know if that's even appropriate right now, but.
Since it's not in the board packet, we would prefer not to get that because otherwise we should disseminate that amongst all the board members. So
totally understand.
If that's readily available online, unless Judith.
If you want us to, we can do that in a quick minute and disseminate it to everyone. Would you like that, Mr. Chair? Yes?
I personally don't, but if other board members do, it's...
Let's do that.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Scott Sales, if the information's available, I think it's prudent just to share it, even though it's might take a little bit longer, but it's going to cover, it's available, it's right there. And I know that copy machine runs real fast.
But I think that, unless Mr. Riley, is there anything else you'd like to add, or is that the extent of your...
So the reference in regards to pest is on page 12, 51 of the report that you should have. Regarding this particular property that was submitted as a result of that. And I guess what I would say is that the question that comes before this board is whether performing a termite treatment is a repair. And it can't be a repair because it's not even regulated by this board and it's not included in the standards for a home inspection. So when we're talking about a repair, we're talking about something that a home inspector says, okay, there's a deficiency here, and that deficiency needs some type of repair. And we tell our clients up front, it's on our website, I believe you have it in your packet, I believe that she included that, in regards to why we can't assist the client in making the corrections located during investigation. And we also, I'm also a registered general contractor. And so for the board's information, we have never made a repair on any home that we've ever inspected. Matter of fact, we've never made a repair on homes that somebody else has inspected. That's not what we do. But we explain on our website very clearly why it's important for us not to do the repairs. It's a conflict of interest. So that is on our website, so you know. So from our perspective, a termite treatment is regulated by an entirely different board, and that is not something that falls under the, quote, repair associated with the home inspection.
Mr. Chair, I've got a question. Mr. Wiley,
please.
On the termite, I'm a little confused. Did you do the termite inspection, or did another company do that, the whole thing?
So the other company is Fortress Termite Protection. It is a sole member LLC. I am the sole member of that company. So that termite inspection was performed by Fortress Termite Protection for night vision inspections. Night vision inspections cannot do termite inspections because night vision inspections are not licensed to do termite inspections.
So you're on the property, you're doing a home inspection, and if you see termites, you're able to treat it under this other company? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. So we wouldn't treat it right then. What happens is we issue a report, like the one that's being copied and will be distributed to you. That report is going to show whether there's evidence of termites or not evidence of termites. And again, that's governed by the Arizona Department of Agriculture, the Pest Management Division. And then if it's requested of us, we would go back and we would treat the property for termites. Thank you, sir.
Well, and I would be inclined to agree that, you know, the treating of termites is not a repair. It's the equivalent of if your basement is flooding, you're turning the water off so the water stops coming in and causing further damage. But to repair would be, the case would be you take out the wood that's been damaged and replace it. In my opinion, that would be repair, which is not the case here. We're just talking about stopping the termites, not fixing any damage that they've already done.
That's correct. Fortress Termite Protection is not even licensed to fix the damage. Now, Castle Core Construction, again, which is a sole member LLC, which I own, is licensed to do that work, but we don't do repair work on homes, never have. So, and we've held I've held those licenses for many, many years.
Do you do the tie downs too then?
So, when a property, so if there's a manufactured home, tie downs are only associated with a manufactured home. And in a manufactured home, if the lender is if it's an FHA loan, then the lender requires what's called a foundation anchoring system, which is compliant with HUD. Now, in order to determine whether that foundation system is compliant with HUD, the only person that can do that is a registered engineer. Once again, a home inspector cannot determine whether a home is compliant with HUD. So I'm also, as you know, a registered professional engineer. So it is not a repair associated with a home inspection because a home inspector can't even tell you whether the home is compliant with HUD. So if we have a particular scenario where they're doing an FHA loan, then we provide them an engineering certification for that FHA loan. That is something that Night Vision Inspections does. We also do it for VA loans. We also do it for conventional loans because they want to know the structures that are attached to the manufactured home. They want to know that they're appropriately attached, and they want to know that if there's a problem with the wind, that the structure is not going to be damaged. So we provide those certifications as well, but they fall under my engineering license, not under the home inspection license.
So when you're doing an inspection and you're in a mobile home, you're down in the crawl space, you see that it's just not tied down. And you mention it to the buyer. You say, hey, this should be tied down. I can take care of it?
No, we explain to the real estate agent and to the buyer as a courtesy that, so sometimes it's tied down, but it doesn't comply with HUD requirements. Sometimes there'll be a what's called a tie down system in each of the four corners, but that doesn't comply with HUD. So we would explain to them why it doesn't comply with HUD as a courtesy from an engineering standpoint. We also explain to them that we provide engineering certifications for VA loans, conventional loans, and FHA loans. And
so you find, all right, so you find a deficiency, you're saying, hey, we can fix this though, correct?
It's not a deficiency, all right? So the home that has been installed has been permitted and approved through Yuma County. So it's not a deficiency, and it's not something that's inspected by a certified home inspector. All right, so it's entirely different. It is done only by a registered professional engineer, and it's for the HUD requirements for them to be able to perform to obtain financing. It's not making a correction. It's not making a repair. It's not something that's called on a home inspection. It is something that they have to have a registered professional engineer certify. And so I live in Yuma, and there are only a few of us that do the certifications for the manufactured homes when they're getting FHA funding. So there might be a home that's been there for 25 years. The house is not going to blow away. The house is the foundation of that house when it was constructed was installed per the county standards at the time. But if that person wants to borrow money from the government and use an FHA loan, they have to have a very specific type of system installed underneath the home. So, again, that's way outside the confines of what a home inspector does. Home inspector can't even check to determine whether it complies with the requirements of HUD.
No, so, but we can say whether it's there or not, and we do that all the time as a home inspector.
I think what, just so that we stay on target and continue moving forward, really what we're looking for here is staff is looking to, from this board for guidance relative to one of the items is termite treatment considered a repair?
I was interrupting. I just wanted to be sure because I was looking through the rules. I didn't see a definition of repair, so I'm asking Mr. Donald if we are constrained by any particular definition of repair.
It is going to be up to the board to interpret its own statutes with regards to that, and I believe that is one of the big questions, whether repair encompasses remediation or other terms, and whether the statute was designed solely and specifically with a traditional intended definition of repair, or whether the purpose of the statute was specifically to try to address situations in which a home inspector might own other collateral businesses.
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. Just I appreciate the new document. That's very nice. I like that up at the top again, the document's seems like it's a document from the Arizona Department of Agricultural Pest Management report, so I'm assuming it's a form that they put together. But up at the top, it does note this form must be completed only by a certified applicator. So, and looking through, I don't see the word repair in there. So it's
correct
application of the items that would go in there. In reading R4-30-301.01B3, which is what we're kind of looking at for talking about the performance of any repairs to the property, let me just read it. Perform or offer to perform for any additional fee or have any financial interest in the performance of any repairs to the property that has been inspected by that inspector or the inspector's firm for a period of 24 months following the inspection. So, in my opinion, the word repair in this case wouldn't apply. Now, if there could be some other items here, and you might want to review this just for in the future. The way I read it here has been, any repairs to the property that have been inspected by that inspector or the inspector's firm. It seems like you a couple. Thanks. There. Okay. So it's trying to cut me off, Mr. Chairman. I see. No, it's just you might want to read that just to make sure. Since you're wearing so many different hats, I would read that as if you're the inspector, the home inspector, and then you're also doing something else, regardless of whatever is on one of the other businesses that, that might trigger something in the future. So just to read that and understand that you're the inspector, and you're also doing something on a different company, you would still be the inspector triggering the other one. So just take a look at that. I'm not saying one way or the other. Just read that in your leisure for the future. But okay, I don't have anything else other than I don't see that it's a repair.
I would agree with that. Does anyone here feel otherwise on this board?
I do.
Can you elaborate?
Yes. Okay, so to me, it's kind of like you're circumventing the whole ability to repair things that you find. And that's the whole reason why these code of ethics are in here. By you taking care of issues that you find during the home inspection, even if it's a termite treatment or a tie down, you're gaining extra revenue from that. And the whole idea of this code is to make sure that there are things that aren't fabricated. I'm not saying it is, but that's the whole thing. So home inspection should be just a home inspection. May I address that?
I believe Bill would like to say something first. Mr. Osgood.
Probably 30 years ago, I bought a house in Fountain Hills and had no idea what a termite was, and went downstairs and I saw, the trails on the wall and everything. This is application and treatment. It has nothing to do with repair. So you apply whatever you apply. Back then it was a different chemical. Like I have wooden stakes. I have 26... stations around my house that constantly kill the termites or treat that. Now for the walls, they had to bring somebody else in, and that's considered repair. But never was the termite company or anything, Terminex or whoever it was, had anything to do with the repair of treating and applying a pesticide.
Any other comments?
If you go to number two under the code, it says pay or receive directly or indirectly in full or in part a commission or compensation as a referral or finder's fee related to the correction of defects found within the scope of a home inspection.
A defect? Is he a term?
But was there a referral, though?
It's his company. It's a referral.
The termites didn't come until I moved in. Exactly. But, you can find the termites, but, they may not appear for a while after,
The whole idea of the code of ethics is to prevent somebody from creating something that might not be there, okay? So if you're just responsible for a home inspection, that's all you're responsible for. You're not finding things where you can make more money on it. That's the whole idea.
Can I address that real quick?
Yes, please.
So with all due respect, Mr. Smith, that item solidifies my position. Related to the correction of defects
found within the scope of a home inspection. Mm-hmm. Well, what they're saying is that here's why the code of ethics exists. Because there are unscrupulous people out there who would say, I'm going to go do a home inspection, and then I'm going to inspect your house, right? And I'm going to come up with these 15 items that are wrong. I can fix it for $10,000. And you're like, okay, sounds great. But you could have got those things done for $2,500. That's the reason. And it limits itself here in this particular deal to defects found within the scope of a home inspection. And termite treatments aren't within the scope of a home inspection. Neither are foundation anchoring systems. Those are both regulated by two different boards, and they're not within the scope of a home inspection. The scope of a home inspection is very, very clear. And I do want to just point out again what the assessor said. Our reports are exemplary and have no defects, and they exceed the standards of practice requirements. So within a home inspection, which is what we're talking about here, this is a complaint against my home inspection license. None of these items that we're talking about right now are even within the scope of a home inspection. They're not in that scope. And that's defined by the very rule. That's not defined by me. That's defined by item number 2 in this rule.
And that is what we're looking at here is termite treatment a repair. I just want to bring us back to what the issue is, because we could continue on this for another couple hours, and I think we have a lot of other cases we need to get to. So unless there is a board member who feels otherwise, then I would like to entertain a motion for dismissal of this case against Mr. Jimmy Riley relative to that element, because that is what we're asking for guidance here.
I'm just kind of solidifying my comments out loud so that it's on the record, which is I don't think it's necessary for us to reach the intent of the definition and the intent of the rule when the term is not defined within our rules, so I think we can go with the plain and ordinary meaning of the term repair.
And Ms. Kanky, your opinion is that this is not repair, correct?
That is correct.
Would you then like to make a motion to that effect?
Yes, so I would make a motion to dismiss item 8, 52HI23041.
Just for clarification, that's 8F2.
I apologize, yes.
Thank you. That's a motion. Do we have a second?
Bill Nesgood, I'll second that.
Ooh, Kurt, you can pick which one you want there for the second. So.
I think Bill got in there just a second before.
All right. Then Bill is our second. All right. Any further discussion? All right. All those here in person, in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay, we have one opposition and 10 in favor. Motion dismiss passes. Thank you, Mr. Riley, for your time. Okay, we have one more in person, and that is agenda item 8F4, Mr. James Elson. Please come forward. And if you can just state your name for the record.
James Robert Elson.
Thank you, sir. All right, first we're going to hear from the investigator. So, Ms. Crawford, if you would please.
Certainly. Respondent entered into Board Order P23-055 on August 22, 2023, agreeing to pay an administrative penalty fee and cost of investigation fee within 30 days of the effective date. Respondent has been before the Board before for similar matters in the past. In regards to Board Order P23-055, Board staff provided respondent with reminders via email and postal mail on 3 separate occasions with no response. In December of 2023, respondent reached out to Board staff and advised of his intent to pay both of the fees and reported that he had been dealing with multiple health issues. Respondent paid the penalty and cost of investigation in full as of yesterday. And this matters before you today to determine how you would like board staff to proceed with this case, case P24-041.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. Mr. Elson, if you would mind stating your position on this case.
I agree. Ms. Crawford has adequately explained it, and I'm here. Obviously, my this is my livelihood, and this, I've been registered since 47, so I don't want to jeopardize anything. And she is correct. I did have, obviously, I was remiss in not filing, but everything is current now. The firm registration and my architectural registration and the fees and fines. So if you have any other questions, I can expound on this. But anyway, I think I'll leave it there unless you have anything further.
So as far as we understand it, then, the to comply with the board order was to pay the remaining fees, which have now been done as of today or yesterday, you said, Ms. Crawford?
Yesterday.
Okay. Board, any comments?
Mr. Chairman, Scott Seale, just more of how to motion, if I to move it forward, would be to how do we just close it out? Is it just an administrative closure? We have the signed forms from last year. We have the payment. I know there's some other in the documents. There was other information provided as to why some of the payments were late. I don't want to expand upon those, but I know everybody read those, and I'm fine with the reasoning behind them to close this out. But just trying to make board staff on how this might go down to close this out at this point.
Yeah, so Mr. Elson paid the penalties regarding board order P23055 yesterday. So before you was alleged that he failed to comply with the board order, and it would be up to the board to determine what they would like to do, whether it's dismiss, consent, disciplinary action, or whatever the board would like to do.
Is there a motion to dismiss or other action that would be proposed?
Chair, this is Jack Gilmore. In light of satisfying the original consent agreement, I'd like to make a motion that we dismiss.
Thank you.
P24041.
Thank you, Mr. Gilmore. Do we have a second?
I'll second, Stacey Skanky.
Thank you, Ms. Skanky. Any further discussion? All right. Those in person, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right. Motion to dismiss has been granted.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we do have a few we've got to backtrack on.
Mr. Chairman, we have one more person in here that I don't think has had his case heard. Is that okay?
You're just here for entertainment?
Just fine, yeah.
Oh.
He is. He's a lobbyist.
Oh. I'm glad we're providing you with ample entertainment today. So, okay, let's go back. So under enforcement matters, I believe we've covered all of the items 6 and 7 on the agenda, so we are looking at item 8A5, which is case P23090, Mr. James Paul, non-registrant. Give me a second to get that case up here. All right, it looks like that's Ms. Crawford, if you're able to present. This is case P23090. This is James Paul, non-registrant. Sorry to put you on the spot there.
All right. Regarding P23090, Paul, a complaint was received regarding a non-registrant fraudulently using a stamp and seal of a registrant. Respondent was engaged through Upwork, a freelancing website, to complete engineering documents relating to a residential project in Maricopa, Arizona. After interviewing and contacting all leads for the case, including issuing a subpoena to Upwork for user records, no identity could be confirmed for respondent. All accounts associated with the provided information for respondent indicate the respondent most likely resides outside of the United States, but does not provide any reliable contact information to get in touch with him. All of the accounts associated with respondent were suspended or deleted by Upwork due to the inability to identify who respondent is or have any kind of meaningful contact information. Board staff is recommending for dismissal of the case.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. Board, any comments or concerns regarding the proposed request for dismissal?
Mr. Chairman, Scott Sales, just, you know, this, it's interesting seeing all the documents in there about the platform where someone can go and get information and the, you know, the items there. So And just looking at it just got me thinking a number of things. So just, you know, just throw out my opinion on this. You know, in my opinion, while stars, thumbs ups, or other types of reviews on a website can be helpful, and it's worth noting that individual experiences can vary wildly. You know, looking into a mix of reviews, considering factors such as the reviewer's specific needs or experience may provide a more comprehensive understanding of whether the product and or service aligns with someone that they're looking for. So I would recommend people, you know, feel free to ask additional opinions or insights depending on their needs and not rely just on one website to, you know, make your choice on any of the items that this board governs. So that's just my opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Any others? If not, we'll entertain a motion for dismissal.
This is Stacey Skinke. I'd like to make a motion to dismiss item P23090.
Thank you, Ms. Skinke. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Any further discussion? All right. Those in person, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Ms. Hobick.
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, motion for dismissal is approved. Moving on to item 8B1. This is case HI24-029, David Dubrava. This case is up for administrative closure because the respondent has deceased. So, Mr. Cartel.
Good morning. So on December 5th, 2023, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent, after conducting a home inspection in Fort Mojave, Arizona, on or about April 9th of 2023, failed to accurately report on the roof flashings and failed to report on a GFCI outlet in a bathroom. During the investigation, we found that Mr. Dubrava had passed away in 2017. A number of years after the inspection, and we were able to confirm through multiple obituaries over multiple websites and sources that he did in fact pass away. That being the case, we're recommending an administrative closure, being that we no longer have a respondent to address.
Thank you, Mr. Cartel. Board, any comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion for dismissal. Oh, sorry, I apologize. A motion to administratively close this case. My apologies.
Stacey Skinke, I'll move to administratively close case HI24029.
Thank you, Ms. Skinke. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I will second that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Any further discussion? All right. All those in person and in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Ms. Hobig?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, this case is administratively closed. Thank you. Moving on, 8C3. This is HI23-039 Jamie Murfield, and this is complaint proposed for resolution with letter of concern. Mr. Eaton, you guys are getting quite the workout today.
On May 4th, 2023, the board received a complaint from a ledger alleging that respondent, after conducting a home inspection in Maricopa, Arizona, on or about April 28th, 2023, noted that some of the items in the home inspection report needed to be replaced, although he marked the items as satisfactory condition in his report. The respondent was noticed of this complaint, to which he did submit a written response. A case assessment was prepared and sent to the assessor for review. A completed assessment was received from the assessor, the assessor recommended dismissal of all original allegations. The assessor did find one deficiency on the home inspection report, which was that the respondent may have failed to properly report on the type and condition of the floors. Board staff recommendation is that a letter of concern be issued due to the de minimis nature of the reporting deficiencies.
Thank you, Mr. Eden. Any comments? Ms. Rolling? Yes, Rolling.
If I may add some clarification. So the assessment had three minor reporting deficiencies, one from the inspection report and two from the pool and spa. So three total.
Thank you. Any comments? If not, we'll entertain a motion for resolution with a letter of concern.
Mr. Chair, this is Mr. Smith.
I'd like to make a recommendation for a letter of concern for HI-23-039.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I will second that motion to issue a letter of concern.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Any final discussion? All right. All those in person, in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Nay.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone else opposed? All right. That's 10 in favor, one opposed. Thank you, Mr. Eaton. Okay. One last item under Section 8 of our agenda, and that is item 8F3, case P23-104, Niels B. Ms. Crawford, you may have better luck with that last name than I will. Sorry.
The board received a complaint regarding respondent and respondent firm engaging in the practice of architecture on a residential project in Phoenix, Arizona, without registration with the board. After interviews were conducted, two independent case assessments were completed, with both of the case assessments not finding respondent or respondent firm engaging in the practice of architecture. However, concern was brought up regarding respondent firm's website. They were concerned that the language on the website could be misleading to consumers due to the statement that the firm was, and I quote, a collective of professional and experienced designers, architects, and engineers. Obviously, after receiving this in the case assessment, I did follow up with respondent and respondent firm just to kind of see on their end how they explained that. And respondent reported that the firm contracted all work with registered professionals, whether that be architects or engineers, when needed, and that this is stated both on their contracts as well as verbally with clients at the start of their, I guess, work together. Respondent and respondent firm did state that they saw themselves as a project manager or a broker bringing together parties to complete construction projects, and did not believe that they were practicing or advertising to practice architecture or engineering. This matter is before you for board guidance, just to determine whether the language on the website would potentially constitute a violation or not.
Mr. Sales, do you have the language on the, I thought you had something highlighted there. I wasn't sure if that was the actual language from the website or not.
No, that was just a statement that they had inside of their text. So,
okay.
Sorry.
Gotcha. No, it's okay. I knew that was too easy, too good to be true. So really it comes down to the question of whether or not is the public understanding what this firm is offering as an independent company versus what they are subcontracting out. And so the question here before us is whether or not that is clear or whether action should be taken or not.
That is correct.
Board, any comments, thoughts related to that?
Sure, Ms. Jack Gilmore. Question. And Ms. Carper, you may have looked into this already, but the website says they are a licensed design company. That would imply to me, if I were general public, that they have it licensed. It gets into definition again. I didn't say registered, but licensed would imply registration.
In conversations with them, they have elaborated that they are construction management, and I believe that's more in the construction ROC side of things.
I guess to your point, though, Mr. Gilmore, is that when you say licensed design company, that's where it gets a little squirrely, as opposed to licensed construction company or licensed builder or something to that effect.
Exactly. That was my... As soon as I said licensed design, that implies their design professionals, possibly licensed or registered, and it might be unclear to some of the general public side what that means.
And Mr. Chairman, just Scott Sales, just looking at, you know, some of the items here for the violations, the classifications, I'm looking at ARS 32-145, sub-item 3, where it kind of runs through some of the items, and that's what I was looking through here. You know, if I'll just quote here, uses certified, professional certified, professional, PE, registered, registered professional, or professional registered in conjunction with any of the board regulated professions or occupation if this person is not certified or registered as provided by this chapter. So it might be that they are, you know, using the word license to me doesn't fall under that paragraph, which, you know, it's to me what we got to interpret and run off of. So unfortunately, in my opinion, it seems that I don't know what their intent was on it, but based on the words that it seems like we have to, that we have, that we can interpret and run over, licensed isn't in there, but I'm open, hopefully somebody else, and potentially even Mr. Donald might be in on this licensed wording.
There's also a code of ethics in there that talks about misleading or for advertising, so even though he's not a registrant, it is kind of misleading, I would think.
It's confusing, if nothing else, for sure. Yes, Ms. Crawford, in your conversations with the respondent, did they make any mention of willing or potentially willing to modify their website to avoid some of the confusion that this case is dealing with?
They did not bring that up to me, and I did not ask them directly about that. They are very firm in the fact that they are a construction management company and that they do work with licensed professionals, but that they are contracted out.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Scott Sales. Yeah, just based on the information in there with, you know, getting all these other, we'll say, sub-consultants on board that are doing some of these professional licensed items, having them under those companies' sheets and or whatever documents they're doing, it's there. But it goes back to my earlier comment then also about, you know, you're using a website to decide what you want to do there and, you know, checking a number of different ones or whatever someone feels comfortable with till they come up with the decision like they want to use this firm. That's what it's all about.
Mr. Chair, this is Haley. Looking at the board packet, and the logo says ENT, which I would assume is interior. I'm not sure what that reference is as part of the logo. And then it says draft design and administrative construction management right in the top of the logo. It doesn't say anything about relations architecture. The about section does say what Ms. Crawford said, but I think it's pretty clear with the logo at the top of the page that it's not an architectural firm. Personal opinion, I guess, but it's right at the top of the page.
Any further comments?
Does anyone know what the ENT is supposed to stand for? Is that another state's enterprises. Oh, enterprises. Is that the common?
It's, usually it's like a little E with a circle, but I guess,
yeah,
yes.
Maybe another state requires that or something, but.
Well, this board has a couple options, whether it is to pursue disciplinary action or to dismiss. So if there is further comments or a motion, we'll entertain that now.
This is Stacey Skinke. I will make a motion to dismiss item P23-104.
Thank you, Ms. Skinke.
I'll second that. Ms. Lindgren.
Thank you, Ms. Lindgren. Any further discussion? All right, hearing none, those in person, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right. Motion to dismiss passes unanimously. Thank you, Ms. Crawford. That concludes the enforcement section of our agenda. Moving on to policy matters. Judith, do you want to just kind of... Oh, we're requesting a bathroom break. It has been 2 more hours, believe it or not. So, yeah, can we do an abbreviated bathroom break, like 5 minutes? Is that enough? Okay, so it's 11:06. Oh, sorry, 1:06. All right, just checking to see, Ms. Hobick, are you online?
Yep, I'm here.
Ms. Lindgren?
Yes.
And Dr. Campbell, are you there?
I'm here, thank you.
All right, sounds like the gang's back together here, so we can resume our meeting. We are now on to policy matters, and the first one on the agenda is item 9A. It's the Mills case. Mr. Donald, if there's any updates to that case or anything we're sharing with the board at this point.
Those are two different questions, Mr. Chair.
You can choose whichever order you want to answer them, Mr. Donald.
The entire update would be that appellants have filed their opening brief, and the state has until February 12th to file a responsive brief.
Wonderful. Thank you. And nothing further?
No further update. Okay. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I was going to say Your Honor.
Whoa. Yeah, let's not go there. All right. On to the next fun topic, which is item 9B, our board sunset audit review update. Judith, if you'd be so kind.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just defer this to Kurt for explanation. I'm just kidding. But I do want you to know, board members, that Kurt is unbelievable and always by my side, and I am really grateful. Sunset audit review. Okay, so just as a not-so-subtle reminder, every agency goes through sunset audits. The law provides that you can your board or your agency can be continued for 10 years. And this board has, I think the last two audits have been 8-year recommendations, or a 10 and 2/8.
Since 80, it was a 10-year in 2005 and an 8-year in 2015.
and those were self-audits. So there's a lot of interesting talk in the legislature right now about audits. I'm trying to think here how I can just simplify this without saying too much. So we started with our first committee of reference in the Commerce Committee in-house, right? Because I should say before we even talk about what happened is that if there is no continuation of the agency effective July 1st of this year, there is no agency. It's gone. It just goes away. So it is important to know that, and to know that there has been a bill sponsored from Representative Wilmoth in the House of Representatives, and that was for an 8-year continuation. And we're just watching that. It really hasn't had any movement yet. So Kurt and I went together to our committee of reference meeting on January 16th, I think, and it went very well. I was pretty nervous at first. I launched into, so they said you had 15 minutes, so we had prepared what we thought was a good slideshow presentation, and then as soon as I stood up, the committee chair said, we're going to do this in 7, and I think my brain short-circuited a little bit, and I just launched into the presentation, and then I said, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to introduce myself, so let me just go back a minute and do that. And anyway, I think it went very well at the House. There was a lot of questions. Kurt and I were able to meet with Representative Wilmoth, who's the chair, ahead of time and answer a lot of questions, so that was helpful. And then Representative Carter asked a lot of questions, mostly pertaining to home inspectors. Really, there was just a lot of good questions. I haven't timed that, but for them saying you have 7 minutes to present, I bet they asked us questions for maybe 30 minutes or so afterwards, and then proceeded to recommend an 8-year continuation. So that was wonderful, and we were feeling really good. And then the next day we went to our Senate Committee of Reference meeting, and that was a very different atmosphere. So, again, we would normally be in the Commerce Committee, but as I said previously, for reasons unknown to me, we were moved to the Government Committee. That has Senator Hoffman as the chairman and Senator Wendy Rogers, who is here today, as the vice chair. And our presentation was preceded by Homeland Security and Registrar of Contractors. And Senator Hoffman did make it very clear that he didn't intend to give any particular board more than a 2-year recommendation for continuation and would prefer that every board go through a full Auditor General audit rather than any self-audits. So if you go through a full audit with the Auditor General, it takes, anywhere from a year and a half to 2 years, and you could have a team of, 6 or so people with you constantly. It's, it's very... taxing on the staff, but they drill down and just go through everything there is to do, and I don't have any problem with that. This agency hasn't had a full-blown audit like that in a while, according to what we've been able to find, and so that's not the issue for me. The difficult part for me was they let me present, but I felt like the comments were very...